closer.
Try not to tip over.
Well, let's commence. Okay, we'd like to begin our meeting tonight. We'd like to welcome you out to our work session. The first item on our agenda is recognition, but Jed is not here. So, Claudia, I think we'll go to you and your family information on the Resource Center. So if you'd like to go ahead, and if you could come up and use this mic.
Okay.
So that we can...
I'm still trying to get everything working, I guess.
Yeah. I couldn't figure out how to get your thing to do what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Here's Jed. Oh, Jed's here?
Do you want me to go? All right.
Yeah,
we'll go.
It's all
Jed,
right.
Would you like to go right? We just announced your name and everything, so you made it.
Okay, let's start with our Classified Employee of the Year, and that is Juanita Hernandez. I'll read some of the comments that were made on the papers that were submitted for Juanita. Juanita is dedicated to helping the students succeed. I really enjoy working with Miss Juanita. She always has a smile on her face. Her work ethic is strong, and she is willing to help everyone. Juanita is a valuable helper in our school. She is able to communicate with our Hispanic parents, and that has really helped me. Juanita loves and cares about kids. She greets them each morning and watches out for them throughout the day. She is kind to her coworkers and is very dependable. Juanita keeps everything running smoothly. She is an asset to Adams Elementary. And all those things are true and more about Juanita. She's a great parent liaison. She likes to tell people how it is and make sure that everybody's doing what they're supposed to be doing. So we really appreciate Juanita and everything she does for our school.
The board would like to recognize you as Adams Elementary Classified Employee of the Year. So congratulations and thank you.
And on behalf of the Logan Board as well as the Logan Foundation Board, we'd like to present you with this check as well as a gift certificate to your campus support. Thank you for everything that you do. Do you have family here that you'd like to introduce?
Introduce them.
My daughter, my friend,
Michelle. And then she has Adam's family.
I mean, everybody knows me. Thanks
again.
So our Teacher of the Year this year is Michelle Sheely, and she's a fifth grade teacher. So come on up, Michelle. I'll share some of the comments from the nomination forms for Michelle. Mrs. Sheely always goes the extra mile in making sure her students understand their work. When someone gets in trouble, she doesn't yell and scream. She talks about it with us. She never tries to embarrass us, and if she does, she makes up for it. Mrs. Sheely does all this and more. Why I picked P-I-K-E-T, Mrs. Sheely, is because she is the greatest teacher. She helps me on correction, and I know a lot of math. I don't know about you, but Mrs. Sheely rocks. Mrs. Sheely is a wonderful teacher, helps out a lot, and is so funny and nice. I think Mrs. Sheely should win because she is really funny. She wants fifth graders to be ready for sixth grade. She never forgets anybody and is friendly. She respects everybody with kindness. Finally, she gives out candy. That is why Mrs. Sheely should win. Mrs. Sheely is sweet and nice and calm and funny. So I say she be it, meaning the win the prize.
Oh, they say
it
that way.
Yeah. She be it. She knows a lot, and she's very kind. She's also funny. She teaches in a fun way. So please let Mrs. Sheely be a self-sufficient citizen. So we appreciate her. one of her biggest strengths is she expects a lot out of kids. There's not a year that goes by that I don't have a parent that calls me and says, my daughter says Mrs. Sheely's being mean. And then we sit down, we talk about it, and it's that her students are not used to having to live up to such high expectations. And she pushes kids further than they ever thought they could be pushed. So we really appreciate Mrs. Sheely and everything she does for our school.
She was Adams Elementary Teacher of the Year. Congratulations.
And on behalf of the Logan Board and the Logan Foundation, as well as the district, says thank you. She allowed me to come to her classroom last year and teach one day, and it was such a fun activity, and I hope I can do more.
Well, my kids are asking, I thought you said the superintendent. Here you are. Yes, thank you so much.
Well, you're welcome to stay, but those who have received recognition or was here with them, or you can leave, or you'd be more than happy to stay with us for another 3 or 4 hours, but whatever. Okay, we'll now have Claudia Brilliant with the Family Resource Center. Now, if you would like to
Robin, you want to start?
Come. Okay, Robin.
Thank you. You were. I'm very pleased to introduce Claudia Brilliant and also Maria Ibarra, who work with us with the FIRC. Maria also works with us with the McKinney-Vento homeless, did I say it correctly? And we're just really very fortunate, and I'm surprised at times with new parents that they haven't learned about the center yet, because Claudia does spend so much time in our elementary schools at kindergarten registration. She goes out and teaches on literacy nights, and I know that my first real big encounter was when I was ready to adopt out my three-year-old. And my husband felt the same way, and we signed up for a class at the FIRC, and it really changed our relationship with our three-year-old, who's now a healthy, happy eight-year-old most of the time. But they offer lots and lots of parenting classes. The other thing I love to tell people about is they have a lending library of both books and toys. So those of you that have experienced where you buy your kids something and they don't play with it, you can try it out from Claudia before you go there. They also do quite a bit of parent outreach with both preschool parents as well as kids that are in school. They have a reading hour. They have parents as teachers where they go in and teach in the home with families and the kids. And Maria teaches every Friday. It's a Ready, Set, Go program that she has a handful of parents that come that she teaches completely in Spanish to those parents with very little kids so that they feel empowered to have school work for them. So I probably touched just the tip of the surface as to our relationship with the Family Information Resource Center. If you have children or friends that are wondering about things, make sure that they know that that trailer that is at Wilson Elementary is not another classroom. It's actually the FIRC. They have a website so they can check to make sure the hours are open. And what she doesn't offer at the FIRC, she's very knowledgeable about and can send you in the right direction. So, again, Claudia, I know you wanted me to take a couple minutes, and I could probably wax on all evening about the value-added opportunities that they provide to our parents and community. But, Claudia, it's your show. Come on up. Thank you, Claudia.
All right. Okay, and then Maria is here. Maria, will you stand? And Maria comes on Friday mornings, and that's when we teach bilingual Ready, Set, School. And actually, we do side-by-side, Spanish and English, because we found that that's really effective. Do you have any comments you wanted to make, Maria, about what we do?
No. I'm here to give you moral support.
Okay. All right. Well, we have a little PowerPoint presentation, which we really hope will come up. But while you're waiting, let's go and look at what I put on your spot. There is a flyer that we give out to parents that tells them about FERC, and it just tells them some of the basic things that we do. And there's our website on there, which anybody can go to and find out more information. Also, we're very, very excited. We put together a coalition, and in front of you, you have our wonderful, the result of our coalition. We keep talking about, when those of us in education, that parents need to do more in the early years so the children are prepared when they come to school. So we finally decided to do something about that. We are giving one of these books to every newborn family, that is every baby born in 2012 in Cache Valley. And if you'll look it over, we really are excited about them. They basically function as a little reader to read to your baby nursery rhymes and things like that. But they also have instructions for parents that show them exactly what they need to do to help their child get those language skills and get the book readiness and the school readiness for literacy. And look those over. And then we also have it also on the front. You'll notice that it points the parents to a website and to a 24-hour hotline that they can call with any questions they have for information. And it also has that website will give all the different agencies and organizations have a page on that website that will let people find the resources they need. So we're on that website, Child and Family Support Center's on that website, National Child Study, all the different groups that help families for free. So that's going to be a nice resource. And then if you'll take a look at the one in Spanish, you'll find that it is bilingual. But besides being bilingual, it also is culturally sensitive. So it has the sort of rhymes that anyone from a Spanish culture would probably know, and letting them know how they can share those their language with their children and prepare them, give them those language hooks in the brain so that they'll have something to hang anything else they want to learn, a second language or anything else. So it's really, I really like the way these are. Any comments about those?
Do you give them both to every parent or just one?
The hospital is putting them in the newborn packets. So we've asked them to ask people what they prefer. So we'll let them choose. Yes?
Does that only through the hospital, or I know there's some that have a... midwife. Do
yep.
they have them too?
Yes, the midwives have them. We ask them for a census of how many babies they deliver a year, and the midwives, we have counted for them.
That's wonderful.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
We're excited. We found out that about half of the babies born in Cache Valley are born to residents of Logan City. So we're not sure whether it's all those students or something or whatever, or they're moving out to the county when their kids get older. But even though they have more children, we get half of the children born. Okay. And if you notice on the back of the English reader, we really appreciate the support of the coalition, and these are the donors. So we really appreciate Logan School District's participation in that, because that makes this possible. It costs us about $2 a book. So it's a really good deal to get parents getting going on that with $2. Okay. So for those of you, and some of you know about our center, some of you don't, but we really want you to understand our center, so we're going to take you on a little tour of our center. So what we're all about is helping families become successful, and as was mentioned, that little building is not part of the school, it's us, although we're generously hosted by your district. Okay, Lee, what do I do? Turn off the light.
I'll do it on this side.
Okay, back there.
You know, it's probably not optimal, but you can have a lot of time to figure out how to do this.
Oh, that's probably good enough. Okay, he's trying to make it so you can leave it here. It has some DVDs embedded in it.
Okay, so you talk.
Okay, go. Okay, so what we do, we operate a free parent resource library, and we help parents get their preschool kids ready for kindergarten with our Ready, Set, School program. And we offer free Love and Logic parenting classes We have a lovely grant from the health department to teach those classes and to give every family that takes those classes a free workbook worth $10. And the class, I've had parents come from, you know, as far away as Tremont to come take that class, and they tell me that, I said, why did you come all the way from Tremont? And they said, because this class costs $120 a couple on the Wasatch Front. So they get the class free. And then we operate a free summer activity program. It's called Around the World in 80 Days, and we'll tell you more about that in a minute. Okay, so we're open 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. And we're also open on Wednesday evenings, most Wednesday evenings, when we teach the parenting classes. So, see, we got some nice new signs. We're excited about that. Because people kept saying, where are you and what do you do? So we put some signs up that tell people what we do. So when they pass us, they'll know. And that's Ready, Set, School there. And that advertises the parenting classes. Because the front door is kind of around the corner, so we're going to show you how to come in. We put a please come in sign, so we thought maybe more people would find us. And then my intern Jamie is going to give you a tour of the center. We have that beautiful ramp that is so nice because mothers come a lot and stroll with strollers. So they can roll right up, park their strollers on the big wide porch and come on in.
I don't think that's coming through.
I don't think it's coming through either, but there's another DVD.
Something happened here. I must have pushed a button. Hold
yeah,
on.
We'll have to back up. Sorry,
I'm trying.
Guys. Okay, so we have a 6,000 piece, over 6,000 pieces in our library. And that includes educational toys and games, board books, picture books, lots of books for parents on different parenting topics, and then DVDs and audio CDs and lots more, including kits, you know, like Jack and the Beanstalk, and it has all the little characters, and you can do the story and act it out and things like that, fun things like that. Okay, next slide. Okay, and this just kind of shows you the some of the toy library. There's shelves for little kids, the little tiny people, toddlers, and then there's also lots of things for older kids as well.
My name is Brittany, and I come to the Family Resource Center on a regular basis. I bring my little one, Genevieve, and my toddler, Charlotte, who loves to play with all the toys. And she likes to come because there's lots of toys, and there's usually lots of kids, and so she gets to socialize. And she's the oldest. She doesn't have anyone in her family that's her age. But there's lots of books that she likes to pull off the shelves and read, and there's books that I like to read. And there's things that she's learning her letters and her numbers right now. So we have checked out a video on letters and a couple puzzles on letters. And she likes to go through and name them, and she's learning them really well. And it's just a really great place to come to have fun and to learn new things.
Okay, and I want you to know that Charlotte just turned 2, and Charlotte knows all of her alphabet letters and all of their sounds. She's not reading yet, but she knows everything. So I thought, well, that's a good... She used that Leapfrog DVDs and little alphabet puzzles and stuff with her, which is really... I was impressed. Okay, so we have over 1,500 registered patron families. And those are people that have come into the center, and they have signed up to check out things out of the center. And that's not counting all the people that we go out of the center to contact. So basically, Ready, Set, School is probably one of the biggest things we do. So every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday mornings, those are the kindergarten prep classes for the 3, 4, and 5-year-olds. And they bring an adult with them. And they get this, if they sign up for Ready, Set, School, they get this free bag. And I'll kind of pass that around a little bit. And that has the kit for the parents, and it has materials for the children to do the 20 lessons. And so then we have a schedule. You know, we just do the stories and activities every week, and we support parents who are trying to help their children learn, and we encourage them to read to their children. So parents tell us that they really like to use Ready Set School, and that they also like to come to the center to check things out because it's a small library. They can't get lost like they can at the city library. And their little ones, the littlest ones, will be playing with the toys or something while the older ones are sitting down having their kindergarten prep lessons. We're family friendly. People like that. And here's some kids at Ready Set School. So the classes run about no more than 20 children, usually about 12 or something like that per day. Now, in the summer, we do Around the World in 80 Days. We're open all summer long, and our library is open all summer long, totally free and open to families, every summer afternoon from about 1 till about 4, actually. And it's an open house. They just stop by. And we travel to a different country every afternoon, and they learn about that country through stories and songs and games and crafts, and they have such a good time. And here's some kids from Malawi in Africa. People from the community come in and help us teach the lessons and share their country. And these kids are just adorable. In South America, this is Estelle, and she's from Brazil. She came to teach the kids about Brazil. And this is Rubicelia, and she came and taught about Mexico. And this little girl's teaching Irish dancing to the kids. And this was really fun. See how those things came out? Those things that they're supposed to be Burmese pythons. They're just made out of a paper plate. The kids had more fun with those, bouncing them all around. And this, I think you might know the Jim family. They're from the Marshall Islands. They came and shared their culture with us, too. We visited almost 50 countries last summer, and we had over 1,300 visitors. And we had almost 40 people from the community volunteered to come help. And we issued about 219 passports to children, and then they get stickers for every country they come to. And it gives families something fun and educational to do during the summer. I found that families are looking for free things to do during the summer. And they basically have the library and us and parks and recreation. That's about it. And we are grateful for the support we get from your school district and from CASH and from the USU FCHD students are our interns. And we get the health department grant and faith-based groups participate with us. And we do patron donations and lots of different community agencies. I think we partner with probably about 31 community agencies and organizations. And we love our patrons and we take good care of them. So send them over. Okay. Any questions? Okay, we've got good numbers. We'll send our numbers over. Basically, just about 200 new patron families find us every year and sign up. And we trained, last school year we trained about 257 parents in Love and Logic. So that's 250 less stressed parents, we hope, out there, right? Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much, Claudia. We appreciate that presentation very much. Thank you. Okay, we'll now have a discussion on Reed Keene. I guess that's between Zane and Dawn, if you would like to.
Yeah, we just thought we'd give you an up-to-date where we are as far as the Reed Keene program in the district. And I invited Dawn here to address that with you since he's the one doing it.
So sheet that I gave you, the one that's only got half the page covered, that's the database that coincides with our electronic locks. As you'll see as you thumb through that, there's 440 some odd users. and the corresponding database that we maintain now that deals with that. And these are the ones for the elementary schools. The middle school and the high school maintain their own databases for that. I just wanted to show you how many users we have on those systems now. And the second packet I gave you is the actual hard keys. You'll see the number of doors that we've done. It's basically every exterior door in the district. It's somewhere in the neighborhood of 200 doors. The only exterior doors that we haven't done to this point are the ones at the Hillcrest that go directly into the classrooms. And we've got the locks to do them, we just haven't rolled it out until we do the whole school just for convenience for the teachers right now. But the most important thing that I'm most proud of is the database that goes along with it. It's a living document, and long after I'm gone, somebody will be able to take that over and maintain it, and it'll last the school district 50 years into the future.
Don, who determined who got what keys? How was that determined?
It's kind of determined by the structure of the master key program. But what I've done is gone through and assigned each building a building master, and then I can build off of that. So if the principal decides that they want somebody to have a building master, then they can have it, but it's only good for that school.
So the principal basically decided
right.
who needed
yeah.
what,
right.
and he had the final
will,
decision.
Will work with me on who needs what, and then I'll just key it accordingly.
Okay.
And we'll pin up the locks specifically to meet their needs.
Good.
Other than the exterior doors. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to have a lot of building masters floating around so that we kept having to change the system again. So I just keyed vital doors to the building master so they can get in at basically every side of the building, but not every door.
Good.
That way, if they do lose one, we can go out and change four doors in a hurry without having to do the whole school.
So how well is this, how easy was the adoption?
Actually, at this point, I think it's been easier than I anticipated. I think we've had a couple of people that have complained about it, but I don't think it's been anything over the top. I don't know. Maybe Dan could elaborate on that. He's probably
the most stores.
Yeah,
most
we've
effective.
Got a lot of doors. I was thinking 200. We have 200 in our school. No, I just have one person I'd like to visit with you about. Because there's one person there at that school probably more than anybody as far as getting in and out of a lot of different buildings that may streamline his job a little better.
And the beauty of this is if somebody needs access to a certain door, now we have a database, we can punch up that door and see what key operates just that door, and we can assign a key just for one door or a storage unit or a garage, or like the paint room at the high school is a good example. There's a number of different people that need access to that, but they don't necessarily need access to the whole building. So this way I'm able to just punch up that door, cut that specific key, and give that key out. And if it's lost, it's only one door that we need to rekey rather than the whole building or the whole district.
Are you the person maintaining the database?
I am. Yeah. Me and my carpenter do the locks together, so I've got the database built, and now in order to assign a key you need to go in and enter a name, a location, and what door number you're assigning that key to.
And I know our policy said that yearly we would kind of do a key report,
and I think this kind of falls in line with that. I think it's been about a year since we talked about it.
So every year I guess it would be building administrators will need to double check and make sure the keys that Ann Geary hasn't lost her key. I don't
right,
get one. But
right. Yeah. Yeah. That'll definitely be between me and the principals to make sure. And they've been very good about it. If the principal hasn't emailed me, then the secretary or custodians have been emailing me that this key's been collected from this person and reassigned to this person.
That's good.
Primarily, the focus has been on the exterior doors to this point.
Right.
And the intent is to transition the interior.
And we have made some transitions into the interior. As requests have come in to change any locks on the interior, we're now doing those with the new lock system. Now we've done the administration offices and counselor's offices at the high school. We've done several classrooms at Bridger Elementary. And I think we've done some classrooms at Mount Logan Middle School. Just as the requests have come in, then we've transitioned to this new system.
What happens if somebody tries to duplicate one of those keys?
They can't duplicate it. You could duplicate the cut of the key, but nobody but us can buy the blanks.
Okay.
So even if they duplicated it, it won't go into the keyway.
What's the process for someone leaves the district, seeks employment elsewhere? Whose responsibility is to get that key?
The administrator that's over that person is ultimately responsible, but I've also got the database, so if there's a change and we haven't got the key back, then I can follow up and try to get it. And like I said, we're trying to minimize the coverage of each key. So, for instance, a teacher's key may work the common areas like workrooms and the teacher's one specific classroom. We're trying to funnel everybody into the electronic locks so that we can easily change out the access through that. So it'll hopefully minimize any rekeying as we go forward.
And I know one of our concerns was we knew there were keys out in the community. Have we heard complaints from any of these people who've always had keys?
Yeah. There's been numerous complaints like that. But it's complaints in the order of, hey, I used to have a key that fit everything in this district. I don't anymore. Well, you probably didn't need one, so tell me where you need to get, and we'll try to accommodate you.
Which is better for security and everything else.
Right.
I know counselors don't want their doors.
Yeah, our buildings are definitely more secure than they were a year ago.
The comments that I've had a couple comments from teachers that, and I just am asking for clarification, that in the past have had keys that could access, you know, pretty much wherever they needed to go in their school building. And now they're have limited access with the key that they've been given. And the frustration, I think, is that sweepers have access to everywhere in the building, yet our professional teachers have access to limited areas of the building. So are you telling us that if that's a decision of their administrator on who has access where? So if they feel like they need more access, it would be, or have limited access, it was a decision made by their principal?
Yes and no. I would say that if those teachers are saying that now, it's erroneous information because they haven't been rekeyed on the interior of the building. They may not have access to all the exterior doors that they once had, but they still can get in the building, and they still have the existing key that they had before that still operates all the interior doors. So if they don't have it, it's their administrator that's collected that key from them. Very, very few teachers have been issued a new key because they use the electronic access to get into the building, and they've still got their old key that works on the interior doors.
Well, but the exception would be like in our office, and once you get in the building to get into the administrative office or in the counseling office, those have been changed.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And Dan got me a list of people that needed access to that area, and we got them all a key.
But in the past, everyone who had a master key could access that area?
Theoretically. And nobody knew how many people that was. We didn't have any database to coincide with it. So it could have been 50% of the people at Logan High, and it may have been more or less than that.
So only selected areas inside the buildings have been rekeyed, but
right.
Everything
right.
Outside has been rekeyed.
Yes. Yeah, so anybody that is employed by the district still has access to get into the building. And if they had a key that was to non-sensitive areas like administrators' offices or counselors' offices, it'll still get them there. And as we change any critical areas like a workroom or a media center or something like that, the principal's the one that decides who gets those keys.
It's good.
And it may seem to a lot of people that, you know, why does a sweeper have more access than me? Realistically, they need more access than a teacher. You know, they need to get in every room they clean. And, you know, when we get into the bigger campuses like Logan High and Mount Logan Middle School, there may not be one key handed to a sweeper that gets into every room, but we can do, like, science department, math department, and have a master key for that department that doesn't get them into any other classrooms. So we could funnel that down to specific sweepers that do those halls.
So is our goal eventually to rekey all interior doors?
Yes, every door is.
And the same system will apply that all these people who need keys will have keys.
As assigned by the principal.
Right.
Assigned by the principal.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. And the whole motivation behind that, one of the main motivations isn't just security, but also, you know, we've invested a lot of time and effort into doing this, and I don't really want to see us doing it again in my career here. So if we can control who's got the keys, who actually needs the keys, and keep that database up to date, then we can minimize the amount of rekeying. And as you minimize the amount of rekeying, you also keep the integrity of the whole master key system so that you're not duplicating key sequences.
And interior doors will just be replaced as needed?
We've actually ordered all of the locks to replace the tech building because they've requested that. There's a lot of problems over there. A lot of people have keys to classrooms that they probably shouldn't. And so they'll be put on their own building master. Dan and his administrators will have a key that opens the whole campus, but the department head and the tech building will have the own master key to that building.
Thank you.
Goodness, they're absent.
Well, we can do copies that are kept in.
You have a teacher gone and you need to open up for a substitute.
Right.
Sometimes you
right.
need somebody more than just the department head that has access to that key, where you're not going to be able to get in there.
Yeah, and like I said, Dan and his administrative staff would still have a master key that would override it all. And we could also duplicate your master key that would hang in the office.
And that's so, what
you know, our intent's not to lock anybody out, but just to keep control over it so we don't have
well,
to.
Well, I noticed on this list there's
substitutes.
Where yeah. sub can be right. given a key to go out right. open up the room.
Yeah, and yeah. the secretaries keep track of those, and if they don't collect them back or they misplace them, they email me and I delete it from the system and issue them a new one.
Very nice.
The main thing is we know who has keys.
Any other questions?
But you can't go in there like currently. So say Clark Ballard loses his key and he's key number 55.
Well,
you can't go in there and say delete key 55 from the system.
No, I can't. I have on that database that's pages beyond that that tells you what locks that.
The
key fob operated, and I have to go to each one and upload to it.
I see.
So
but I can
more
do.
Complicated than we
I can literally do the whole district in an hour, and that's going to every lock physically and uploading to it. So somebody like Clark Ballard or any district level administrator that's got access to all the locks, if they lost it in an hour, I could have it changed in all the locks. Because it's you know it's a matter of 30-second upload, and so the drive time to each lock is the time consumption.
Wow.
If we would have had the infrastructure, I would have liked to have gone to a wired system that we could just do from a network connection, but we just didn't have the infrastructure in place. It was too expensive to go that route.
Wow, that's cool.
Any other questions?
Good job.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay. Our next item of business will be a discussion on issuing truancy tickets. And that will be Principal Fox. And
I'm going to turn this to Doug. What we've done is we visited with some of the judges in town, as well as with our resource officer, and looking at the truancies that seem to be increasing at the school, trying to get an effort to reduce the truancies because we're not having a lot of success going through the court systems. And we want to show this proposal to you, and Doug's worked pretty hard with Mike Russell on this, so I'm going to have him address this with you about having administrators have the ability to write some truancy tickets.
There's a few extras if other people want those. I gave you a graph which goes from 2009 till today. So this is January 10th of every year from 2009, the number of kids that have gone past the habitual truancy, which in Utah the law is 5 days, which on our current schedule would put it at 35 truancies. At that point, by law, they're supposed to receive a letter from the state, and then if they keep going, they get a second letter and then referred to court. However, we found that a lot of those referrals are just sitting around and nothing's happening. So we propose to have the ability to write Logan High truancy tickets that are separate from our resource officer's tickets, so they would not go through the juvenile justice system. This would happen to two groups of students, and I'll let you read through that handout on your own, but once a student hits the threshold of 21 unverified absences, we automatically send a letter home, which is according to state law. In that letter, we'll now say that when your son or daughter hits 35, they're going to automatically receive a truancy ticket from the high school. The first ticket would be 15, the second would be 30, and then every ticket thereafter would be $45. And that puts some teeth into which they would receive a truancy ticket from the officer. They could also receive a truancy ticket from the officer, but this bypasses the court system. The other group of students that we would give kids that are habitually in the hall, but maybe mom and dad are excusing the absences. Kids are hanging out in the lobbies. I've warned them repeatedly to get to class. I've given them sloughs already, so they owe Saturday school. And the next step is I start issuing tickets.
These are periods now. So 21 periods,
right,
is 3 days.
It's 3 days.
3 full days.
Or every fifth period for,
right,
21 years.
Right. So that's our proposal, is to put a little teeth into it and have some real consequence for the students for being not only habitually truant or being in the halls without a hall pass after being warned repeatedly. They're in the halls. Mom and dad's called to excuse them, but they're still on campus. And our policy is if you've been excused, you're not supposed to be on campus. And so that gives us the ability to help keep our halls more clear and to help with our habitual students that are truant, put some teeth in it. So that's what we'd like to do, is issue Logan High tickets. And so I think that would really, really help us. So on that document is the problem, our current procedure, and then the proposal, what we'd like to do.
Okay, if I get a ticket,
which you
supposed to pay 50, yeah, which I would. And I said, Doug Snow, you can hang in here. I'm not paying it. I just keep being true.
We send it into collections like any other school fee that's unpaid. Also, I would tie it into our Saturday school, just like if a kid sloughs, doesn't go to Saturday school, they lose credit. So if I issue a ticket because you've sloughed fourth hour and you refuse to pay it past a certain date, you've lost your credit in that class. So it's the same penalty as sloughing and not going to Saturday school, and the same penalty as having a school fee that you're refusing to pay, it goes to collections. So,
I have two questions. One is how state law supports us on this.
I've talked to other schools that are doing this, and they haven't had any issue with it.
And we're okay with our local agencies because they do have truancy policies, correct?
Yeah, our resource officer told us that absolutely we can.
Because we don't want
parents, decide to the district.
We don't want parents to be able to go somewhere else and say you're out of line. That's my other question is, and I wrote down, what about, I know one of our biggest problems is those parent-excused absences. And so some way we need to have it, and it may be in here, I haven't looked closely, but that you're issued a ticket, parents can't excuse you from the ticket even though they may excuse you from the class, right?
Right.
Money even if you're excused.
If you're in the hallways, you've been warned, and this is not going to be the first time any of us see somebody in the hall.
Right.
As I know, I've talked to you on more than one occasion, I've given you a slough already, and which parents cannot excuse sloughs. So that answers your question.
You
a parent cannot. Oh, yeah.
Good.
I had 6 kids at Saturday school just for me personally turning them in for sloughing, which cannot be excused.
Be down the hall visiting.
If a parent excused the kid, they cannot be on campus.
Okay.
Because then it becomes trespassing, which is a $250 fine, which is a lot more than a policeman orders truancy. That's $35. So this is well below what fine could be issued.
And when would you like to implement this?
Immediately. That the semester break, which would be Monday.
Next month, well, next Tuesday.
And you'd notify them by phone? No. Or how would you notify all parents now, if they're aware?
Now, the kids that are on our habitual truancy list, the letter that we are already sending home, that first letter will say, will have an additional sentence saying, when your student hits 35, they'll automatically be issued a ticket for every single truant thereafter. 15:30, then 45, 45, 45, 45. So, yes.
How do you account for the rise in truancy?
Well, I think the first 3 years, these are raw numbers. Our enrollment's gone up,
okay.
But it has definitely been a spike this year, as you can see from the graph.
Any reason why there would get any selecting
students?
Students are just more encourageable. I mean, I don't get it.
That's right.
What choice do you need?
Woeful lack of culture and upbringing, I guess. I don't know.
Well, we had that report from the health department showing a spike of drug use and alcohol use and everything else that this year, for some reason, was way up. And I don't know if that could coincide with the same thing.
You know, a lot of us who've been in education over so many years, we've watched waves, and anybody who's been in it, we have watched students we've identified in maybe even as young as third grade as, boy, this class, for whatever reason, seems to have an equal mix. And they come all the way through the system. Our ninth graders happen to be one of those students, as reported to us by the Mount Logan Middle School, is that we have an interesting collection of students in our ninth grade, and that has borne out. Now, not huge numbers. We're not talking about a couple hundred kids. We're just talking about 20 to 30 students who have become all-stars quicker than they would have in years gone by. And again, what you're seeing here is habitual truancy. We can probably go through and tell you exactly who they are by looking at them. We know who they are, and we will push them to class. In the very next class period, we will then see them again. And we'll push them to class, and then we'll see them again, and see them again, and see them again. And then we say, well, you'll get a truancy ticket. What happens to that? It goes to the court. Well, it doesn't go to the court. First of all, it goes to the probation officer. Probation officer looks at it and decides, okay, I'll work with you. In the meantime, all the probation officers working with them, they're still hanging out in the halls, and we push them to class, do the same thing. And then finally the probation officer says, well, I'll talk to the county attorney and see if they feel this is something the county attorney wants to press charges on. The county attorney has told us, we have so many other things going on. You guys fix those at your school. And that has been a message that's been given back to us by the court system for 2 or 3 years. You do something at your school.
So do you think this policy will get at those students? Will they feel bad enough that they would actually...
There's something that we won't be able to do a thing with. And I could take you down and show you a young lady who's a ninth grader that had something like maybe 400 absences already. And we worked with her. Doug has worked with her. I have worked with her. We made agreements with her and everything else. Okay, she has started to show up this week. I saw her today, and I said, this is 2 days. She said, yeah, this is 2 days. We may not be able to get her because she has some excuses, but I can tell you there's another. And I can give you off names of students. You go, oh, I know that family. I know that family. I know that family. Oh, those kids are? Yes, they are. They need to be held accountable for those times. And they say, I can pass this class with a C or a D. I'm okay with that. But so those kids, I think, that we're going after will be that. There's going to be those kids up here at the high end, but we will still try and get the courts to do something with them.
And I'd just like to put out right now, how is this going to affect graduation rates? And we can talk about that later.
To answer my question, you think this policy will affect those, at least the significant number of those students?
Yes.
Okay. I do. Right. I have to pay attention a couple of
times. There's no reason that this policy is not going to work. It's going to work. Terrific.
Well, it works on how we enforce it and how we're able to
carry through on in that. We're just out there getting the ticket and forget about it. And they'll all quickly, as some of them have, as one kid said the other day, well, you're going to give me a ticket to the police officer. Are you just going to give me a ticket? And the police officer came in later on and said, that kid has an attitude. I said, yes, that person does. So, we'll work the system.
I have a couple concerns. First, what if it's students on fee waivers?
Go to class. I don't know if fee waiver has to do with going to class. That's my answer. Go to class.
That's your way to work it off.
But go to class, be on time.
They would still be liable under this. Yeah. They could not waive
this.
They can't
waive this. Is
can't waive
fee
that's
waivable.
And what do you do with the money?
With the money?
That you get.
Pizza.
Popcorn.
Teachers. We generate some money. One thing we've discussed is hiring an additional part-time hall monitor to help with those tickets and help in the hallways.
Like the Mandalay police officer, right?
Exactly.
How to hire him.
Yeah. So that was our first thought.
To get somebody that could be out in the halls and making sure that we're getting kids to class.
Because this is a fee, it does have to have formal approval by the board, which would be on your January 25th. Is it the 25th board meeting? Or the 24th board meeting, Tuesday the 24th. So the earliest it could go into play would be the 25th, but you could do the information out to parents, information out to everyone to
parents
between now and then.
And morning tickets could even be issued if it was started the semester already. Thanks. After this time,
we'll send a letter.
We can get the letter out
to the parents.
And I would definitely want a plan from you saying that this is how we're going to spend the money, so that it's not just waiting there. And
we're hoping it doesn't generate anything, right?
It may sit there for a couple of years while you accrue, but I would certainly want a definite accounting for that money.
Absolutely.
Well, so that would be part of your proposal.
It'd have to be accounted for anyway.
It's on the calendar, I guess.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying, but I wouldn't want it just to be dropped.
Yeah, we may want to do something to reward good attenders, 100% attenders at the end of each quarter.
Yeah.
So something to reward the kids that are doing well.
My iTunes card is more valuable than a McDonald's $20. Gift certificate and one of those iTunes cards.
Mm-hmm. I like those too.
Okay, anything else on that? Any questions?
And I don't think any of us have.
Have you had any parent input on this at all? I mean, are we going to hear parents calling in the next couple weeks saying, what the heck are you guys doing? So they have no.
I think they have to bring a test first before they can go out.
And my response to them is that your son or daughter will not be going through the court system. If you don't want us to do this, then we'll send it to juvenile court, and now you're in the court system. I would think, as a parent, this is a much better option.
I would like this one to you community council, though, so they understand it and can explain
it. We've had that discussion with
them. Oh, you've had with the community council?
Yeah, were you, I think, Sue?
No, that was not the community council.
Oh, that was a different meeting, yeah. But we've had that discussion, which we will again.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is that it then, Doug?
Yep.
Okay. We'll now go to our next discussion item. This is a review of work on Tier 2 intervention proposals for the high school. And Dan?
This is our interventions and what we've been working on maybe the past at least 3 years that we've looked at, where we instituted our FIT program this year with our freshmen. We've always had the South and North Campus as an intervention. We've had our logistics team and our programs and resources team look at other avenues as far as interventions. You got some information, I believe, sent from the programs and resources that looked at what we were doing or what we can do. We looked at extended lunch, but we just don't have the facilities to do that, particularly in the kitchen area, to have a common lunch. So as we've researched and looked around, there's a schedule out there called Flex. It could be used within a semester schedule, a trimester schedule, could be worked on an 8-block schedule. And we want to introduce that because the most powerful thing about the Flex schedule is that every student, 100% of the students, have a chance of having interventions, rather than like our FIT program, which is dedicated to just the freshmen that are at risk. So as we've gone through and looked at research and so on, we feel like this is something that we ought to be looking at seriously for all our students as we look at our student body, looking at the changes in the enrollment and the diversity that we have. A lot of discussion has come up that we may have looked at this as a knee-jerk reaction to our teaching 5 out of 7 or going to a teaching 6 out of 7. Obviously, that's been part of the discussion as we've gone through this and what we could do to assist the teachers as we go through this change if it occurs. But I think the goal that we all want to look at is what's going to be the best for improved student learning. I also think that it's important that we use the wisdom of our teachers, that they have some input in what we're doing. We've met with every department. We've met faculty as a whole faculty. We've met with our community council, showed them this PowerPoint that Doug will be presenting when I finish up here. We've had input from individuals that have come and visited with us as administrators, some from our parents, some from our faculty. But I think it's important as we look through this PowerPoint that you guys collect some questions as we go through. And when we're through with the PowerPoint, we would like to open it up to a question and answer period so that we can tell you what we're thinking, what we're looking at, what we can look forward to doing at Logan High School to help our students. I know that we spent some time looking at a lot of information to go to the schedule that we're on now. I think that we need to look at what we can do to improve that and what we can do to reach out to all our students as we go through this. We've also looked at, depending on what happens here tonight, having some parent/cottage meetings, January 23rd and January 30th. They're two Monday nights. We're looking at possibly a 6 o'clock type meeting. But I think that's something we can discuss when we get through here with this discussion that we have. So I would like Doug to take us through this PowerPoint that he's shown our faculty as well as our community council, and then we can have a little discussion and we can ask you some questions and we can get some feedback.
What I would like to focus on is intervention and at Logan High, the great need that we do have for intervention. And so to start off with, I want to start with what is good intervention, the definition of intervention, and kind of some goals of any good intervention program. These items here come from Rick DeFore, who, of course, was the principal at Adelaide Stevenson. He's the head of the PLC movement, and he's one of the most recognized educational researchers in the United States. And so a lot of the stuff I draw on comes from this learning by doing, which was implemented at Logan High School several years ago. And so it does come from solid research. And I'll share with you a website that you can go to on the intervention system that I'm proposing, which shows a whole bunch of different schools that are using it, what their results have been, and how they've implemented this intervention. A couple things, and I'll focus some more on the first two in a second. But good intervention has to be timely. It can't come after I've already failed the class. It has to come the second I'm struggling on a concept. That's what timely intervention is. It has to be directive. It cannot be optional for kids that are struggling. So if I'm struggling in a science course, then I have to go get intervention in that science course. And it only becomes optional for students who are being successful, then they can choose to go to a different teacher to get help. But if I'm struggling in a certain area, then that option is eliminated. Every piece of research you look at talks about how important that daily intervention has to be during the school day. A lot of our students, particularly our Hispanic students, go home and babysit. They're not going to come before and after school and get help. They can't. Some students have jobs. Many, many of our students are involved in after-school activities. We already start school early in the morning, so it becomes very difficult for a lot of students to come before and after school. We do offer some after-school programs, but all the research you'll find shows that their success is limited. The best thing you can do for kids for intervention or enrichment is if it's built into the school day. Next has to be system-wide. The whole school has to participate in this, in an intervention system. The other thing about having it built into the day as opposed to an after-school program, now the kid that needs some help is getting it from a qualified professional teacher, not a student from USU coming down to lend a hand. Nothing wrong with that, but those kids are going to do much better if they're getting help from the qualified professional teacher. Okay, so that's another quality of good intervention. And then it has to have some flexibility in the system. So these are, according to Rick DeFore and his group, the criteria for good intervention. Now the program I want to propose to you successfully incorporates every one of these criteria. Now, some of the goals of intervention. Going along with timely, if you look at an acronym of these five items, would be SPEED, which of course goes back to the timely. It's systematic. I like the part of being practical. You have to take the resources you have within your school and provide intervention at no cost, which our proposal would do. Effectiveness. Daily. He talks about this, Rick DeFore talks about this a lot. For a good intervention, it has to be daily to be effective and at the first sign of difficulty, not after the fact. Essential, meaning it's based on agreed upon standards by that teacher and their department, their subject matter, of what is important that they want that student to know and be able to do. And then based on formative assessment, we'll tell them if that student needs some intervention. And then directive, as I mentioned. Students cannot opt out. Parents and teachers cannot waive the student's participation in an intervention program. It's a required part of their school day. So that would be the goals of any intervention system. Now, just to back up and kind of tell you what's going on. 3 to 4 years ago, our program and resources responsive school team started studying interventions. And those documents, Paul Wagner, one of our English teachers, is the head of our program and resources team. And so you were sent some of that information that they've compiled over the last 3 or 4 years. And if you look at the information they've compiled, it's going to look very, very similar to this FLEX program that I'm going to show you in just a second. So they've been looking at that for 3 to 4 years. In the fall of 2010... we started talking about accreditation at Logan High School. We had a professional development day, and a good portion of that we spent on what types of interventions do we think we need at Logan High School. There's a graph I'll show you in a second that is a summary of that discussion that we had in 2010. And then this year, we've had many discussions with faculty, our departments, our community council on this FLEX system that I'm going to show you. So, this is the timeline of when we've started this discussion. So it's not a recent phenomenon. It's something we've been talking about for a while. Okay, this is just, and I know this is hard to read, but this is a summary of that activity in the fall of 2010 that we had at Logan High School. The top faculty was put into groups and they did some brainstorming of interventions that they thought would be needed to help kids. And then the ones that got voted on over and over were ranked. And you can see these top votes from each of the groups with some kind of a daily study hall, Wednesday morning dedicated solely to interventions as opposed to collaborative meetings, which we have both now, and then going to a trimester system with a period based solely for interventions. So those were the three in the discussion with the faculty that come to the forefront in the fall of 2010.
Is this all the faculty members, because the numbers don't add up to your
faculty? They're put in groups.
Okay, because so, it sure doesn't add up to your whole faculty.
Yeah, it was done in groups.
Okay.
So, okay. So let me just talk about what Flex is. It's nothing that's been invented here in this valley. It's a national system. And I'll give you the website in a second. But it's used for intervention and enrichment. So it's meant to help the entire range of students. Your top academic students, your lowest performing students, and everybody in between can be helped with a Flex system. And to give them academic, and its main purpose is for academic support and success. So that's what Flex is. It's used across the country, middle schools, junior highs, high schools. And if you go to this website, allthingsplc.info, it has a whole list of schools, middle schools and high schools. You'll find Adelaide Stevenson on there. Interesting, they changed their schedule several years ago. They're on a Flex schedule, some kind of a modified block schedule. They're not on the semester. There's a couple of schools from Utah on there, excuse me, that are using the Flex, and then schools all across the country. So that's a really good resource. When you do go to that website, make sure you type Flex into the search bar, and then it'll automatically bring up a whole list of schools that you can read about. And it's a really good site to look at. Gives you some really good ideas of what is possible with a Flex system. So let me just talk about some of the advantages of the Flex system. So this goes on beyond the criteria that Rick DeFore says makes good intervention. The Flex system offers even more. Besides daily intervention, teachers on a one-on-one basis with students can offer credit recovery. So for example, let's say I'm in a U.S. history class and I just barely get an F. I mean, I'm on the bubble, and the only reason I received an F is that very last unit, I just didn't quite get it. Wasn't sure, had some trouble understanding, whatever. Well, now I can go during Flex to that teacher, and if that teacher's willing, and says, okay, look, all your other material was pretty good, and here's the only part you didn't get. If you'll redo that over the next couple of weeks in Flex, then you can get the credit for that course. I don't have to retake the class. I can move on with my schedule. Now, if there's an issue because the kid was sloughing and not doing the work, that's a different issue. This first student who wanted to learn but had a struggle and was close. So a kid can recover credit in a Flex system. You can offer enrichment. If a student is doing very well academically, they can take other courses during Flex. That's something that might just interest them. And I'll get into some other options with the Flex. At a middle school level, one of the schools, there's a school in Orem that offers 20 different fun Flex courses if their grades are good. And so that's going to work probably a little better at a middle school level. Those are ideas for enrichment. A student can receive new and additional credit in Flex. So they could, if a teacher chose to offer a credit-bearing course during Flex, that's just an extra class a student could take and earn credit.
As long as you're doing well in your other
courses. As long as you're doing well in your other courses. So that gives flexibility to some of your advanced kids that are doing well, want to take an extra class, maybe take a class they wouldn't have been able to fit into their schedule or whatever. This gives them that opportunity. Yeah. If you skip down to the bottom on seminary, I've talked to our seminary principal, and they have offered seminary during Flex every teacher. No one will take a prep period, and they'll max out the sizes. So if a student wanted to take a couple extra AP classes some music or be in the choir, they could sign up for seminary during flex, provided they're doing well academically, and maybe do that just one of their 4 years, or one trimester or two, and now that frees up their schedule. So if you took seminary just one time during flex, you get two, it actually frees up two classes in your schedule, because seminary would only take up two trimesters. So if you took flex seminary once, now you have two trimesters free, which is a full class. And so you get two for the price of one. If you just did that, that frees up people's schedule. And it's no different than if a person took early morning seminary, which they will still offer.
Except if you're not doing well.
Sure.
You can't,
the main purpose,
you can't go to seminary if you're not doing well in math or social studies.
Yeah, you just take seminary whenever, third hour, fourth hour, whatever. The main purpose, though, for flex is to help all students.
So
you're
going to
have a group of students that are doing fine.
You would limit which students could take seminary during that flex? Or well, release, have release time during flex?
Sure. Then that's a further discussion as we get more into the granular level of this, but that is certainly an option. But if a student takes seminary during flex, then during flex they can't go get help
from another teacher.
The other thing that I really like about it is it protects instructional time. Our schedule gets interrupted with assemblies and testing and this and that. It's almost impossible to get through a full uninterrupted week of instruction. So now when we do have assemblies, they're done during flex, testing during flex and so on. That will not eliminate every interruption, but it will eliminate probably 75% to 80%, and we really protect instructional time. Another advantage of flex is, think of our ESL population. Our Burmese students, our Hispanic students that are ESL, can spend that 50 minutes extra a day to get help. That is going to be huge for our ESL population. What a great opportunity to help those kids excel and master the language and start working on study skills and staying caught up. So that's an added benefit. Again, flex meets the requirements of good intervention, and I've already talked about the seminary. So these are the advantages of inserting a flex into any schedule. So again, flex is an intervention system, not a schedule.
Point of clarification. I'm sure the school board is wondering the same thing I am. The last couple of minutes you have referred to five periods out of trimester. Is it automatically assumed that we will be going to a trimester, or is this
looked at
on a semester basis also?
Yeah, and I'll show you some comparisons what happens with instructional time at the end. So,
just on the enrichment. So for those students that aren't having trouble, will they be able to use that if they're in music classes? Will they be able to use that time to practice solos or ensembles or stuff like that?
Absolutely. You can go to that teacher. You can go to any teacher you want during flex. Now every student would be assigned a teacher, but then that if you're caught up, then you just tell the teacher, and they'll write you a flex pass. And then you go to that teacher to either get help. A couple of teachers have talked to me in the science department, say they would start an AP study group during flex. So there's a whole variety of things that you can do during flex. Choirs, rehearsals, there's a whole list of things that would, just a little creative thinking you can do during flex. Besides, while I'm struggling, or, now I can go make up this quiz. There's a lot of advantage, but that certainly is a possibility. I want to address a little bit for a second the need. If you talk about interventions, if things aren't improving, then we need to take a look why. This is our achievement gap. These numbers are the point differences. And I've got language, arts, and math. Science would look the same, but just got too busy on the graph there. These are the point difference between our Caucasian students and Hispanic students. So if you look from 2007 to 2011, let's take language arts, no difference. There's still a 30-point gap between our Hispanic students and Caucasian students. In math, It was 24, now there's a 27-point gap between our Hispanic students and our Caucasian students. So achievement, as far as the gap, has remained pretty flat.
Except for 2008 in math. That was a weird year.
Yeah, there's a, man, that was the year they changed the math score.
Okay.
And so scores were, but if you look, the gap was worse. There's a 41. It was.
So it's better than it was then.
Mm-hmm. But if you look over time, over the last 5 years, the gap hasn't closed at all. Okay, some other data we looked at was the ACT college readiness. College and career readiness, which is part of the new Common Core that's coming out, that is defined as if you would have a 50% chance of getting a B in a college equivalent course or a 75% chance of getting a C in a college equivalent course. That's the definition of college and career ready. So if you look, there's a huge gap between our Hispanic and Caucasian students. This is just the last 2 years. For the last 3 years, we've tested every kid, all the juniors in our ACT, so as opposed to just those that were college bound. So if you look at, say, 2002 as an example, 72% of our Caucasian students are considered college and career ready in English, only 30% of our Hispanic students. And if you look, there's just a big gap. And that gap is not closed. This is the actual gap in numbers, which between 2010 and 2011, the gap has gotten worse in every category of the ACT, which is concerning. 42-point gap. Jumped to a 46 in English. You see math jumped 3 points, 3 points in reading, 3 points in science, 4 points for those students who are ready in all four areas. So, again, it's flat, and one of the last indicators we looked at was the total number of Fs. Now, if you look at this, we're about 30% minority at Logan High School. But the number of Fs of kids is Hispanic are almost the same as Caucasian kids. So clearly, there's something that we need to do differently. Now, here is just one example. Again, if you go back to the website, you'll find a lot of this. But here's one from Utah, from Orem County, Lakeview Junior High. And it's an actual 789, the old 789 Junior High. They implemented in 2006 a flex system. They had a 40-point gap between their Hispanic and Caucasian students, and you can see it's down to 16, the same with their math over time. And so they have 3 or 4 pages on their website explaining what they did and how they implemented a flex system into their schedule. Okay, so obviously, if you're going to have daily intervention, it's going to affect your schedule. So the question is, if we buy into the fact that we need a daily intervention, something for all kids, advanced, middle-of-the-road, struggling students need a daily intervention, then which schedule is out there that doesn't sacrifice daily instructional time, or sacrifices the least? Because you're going to take a chunk of 50 minutes out of your day to help kids. And so this, and I think this was sent to you ahead of time. This is just a...
We've seen it 3 times.
So you just look at it. So I won't go through very quick. You can see some of the daily... There's a couple points, though, that I do want to, in spirit of full disclosure, there's a difference if you're going to think of what can I do as a teacher on a daily basis that affects kids, versus what do I do with time over an entire school year. So right now, teacher to student load is high. We have a lot of teachers over the 180, some of them in the 190. Lee, how many do you have?
About 200
kids, so as an example, 200 kids. So let's use Lee as an example. Has 200 kids that he sees in a day. He gets 50 minutes on every class to see those kids, And anything extra, those kids have to come in before or after school. Okay, so that's what he can affect this day, tomorrow, and the next day. He can give so much feedback, he can do this, this, and this. If you inserted a flex system, let's just use the trimester as an example, then I would have 60 minutes of instruction per class instead of 50, and an additional 50 minutes of flex time to help. And now I'm going to have 140 kids a day instead of 190. 140, 150. It's going to be a lot less a day. Okay, so now...
How do you get to... Because I don't think we can afford 140 per teacher.
You're still in class, because I'm on five periods instead of seven. So that you're going to have, and I'm going to teach four out of five classes. So you're going to see fewer kids. So I'm going to have 140, 150, 160 kids instead of 180, 190, 200.
I don't think that's part of the proposal that I've heard, because I think because of budget costs, we were at 180 per teacher.
But that's based on a semester system. When you do accreditation based on a five-year trimester, it's, Marshall, I think it's 150.
That's what I'm looking at.
But it's a different configuration, okay. So it's based on the same criteria.
Okay.
So it really is an apple-for-apple comparison.
All right. That's
so now I have much. I have fewer kids to respond to give feedback to, and they can come in and get extra help. But at the end of the year, I have affected more kids. I will teach a lot more kids on that system than I will on the semester. By the end of the year, I've taught more kids. I just have less of them per day.
This presupposes a trimester.
Right, right. I'm just giving you the two extremes. So that's one side of you're looking at what can I do to help kids on a daily basis. So here's the comparison you've looked at. Right now, you get 250 minutes per class with no intervention help. And then there's a seven period with a flex class. Then there's which would reduce classes to 45 minutes instead of 50. And then the flex period would only be 35 minutes.
Have you looked at a six period semester?
You can't get enough credits to graduate from the state. And then the trimester, you get 300 minutes per day of instruction, plus 250 minutes a week of intervention. So that's if you're looking at it, here's what I can do day to day. Now the other way to look at it is the whole year. And the semester system is, with no flex period, I have 9,000 minutes per year of instruction. And then you see the block schedule with a flex a couple of days a week, or a block schedule without any flex. The trimester system. Now, the thing with the flex system, and this is based on a class going two trimesters. I have 7,200 minutes per year instead of the 9,000. But with that flex, averages 10 minutes per class times those days, I get all that time back. And so my actual time per class is still 9,000. So it's 9,000 this way, but I have more time to help fewer kids per day, but I'm going to teach more kids the whole year. That's the two extremes, the two ends of the spectrum, as far as just. But again, the flex system has been inserted in a variety of schedules. My question is, which one sacrifices the least amount of daily instruction? And that's the question. We're already at 50 minutes. That's pretty tough to go through an effective teaching cycle in 50 minutes. So again, some pros and cons. I've looked at a variety of schedules, and you have this too. You're going to give up length for what I can do on a daily basis, but recoup some of that in flex, and you see the minutes and the hour conversion there. And again, you already have this part of your PowerPoint. But that's showing the two extremes. The block schedule, now a kid has eight classes instead of seven to deal with by the end of the week, and you reduce instructional time without even inserting a flex system. So you drop from 250 to 215 without even talking about daily intervention for kids. And so
can you clarify something?
Those are the three common schedules that are out there. Is in order in Utah are rollover and semester is the least.
I don't understand how you've got seven, and I'm sure I'm not a math person.
Which
we have a seven-period semester, and they're 50-minute classes. How does that equal 250 minutes?
60-minute classes. The flex is 50.
Classes well, currently, on the current schedule, minutes. It says seven-period semester, 50 minutes each.
250 per week.
It says 250 minutes. Shouldn't that be 350 minutes per week? Is it 7 times 5, 35?
One, what they're looking at is one class, 50 minutes for five days. If you're looking at just a class, as a teacher, you will see your kids for 250 minutes per week.
Oh, so what they're saying is that the first period, it's not the student, it's the class duration throughout the week cycle, not the student through the day cycle.
No.
Okay, that's
per class.
Per class.
Yeah. So this is what I did in my geography class or whatever.
I got you.
Can I be the devil's advocate here for a moment?
Really?
Yeah. Okay.
Well, and I'm going to play that too in a minute.
Can you wait? Leah, and I appreciate that, but this is for the board. So let the board start.
This is something the board needs to hear.
I understand, but if they've not raised that question, I would be more than happy for you to do that. But let the board be the ones who are guiding the discussion, if you would, please.
All right, I'll buy my time.
Thank you.
Okay, I have some questions, a couple. First, when we left the trimester system, we spent a long time going through finding something better. Okay? I mean, there was so much time spent on it. There was a lot of input, not only from the community, but all avenues, if you will. And it came to us that the semester was the best. Okay? What I struggle with now is all of a sudden, within 6 months, so to speak, I've heard the pros and cons from, my gosh, I don't know how many, it seems like every place we go nowadays, I have someone come up and say, are we going to go the trimester? Are we staying semester? Well, I like this and I like that. And I've had teachers who said, do not go back to the trimester system. I have people who said, leave us on the semester system. Whatever you do, don't change. And it has just been this up and down motion until, why did we change the semester if now we want to go back to trimester? That's a question I would like answered. I think I would also like to hear, I see educators here, that evidently you're here for a reason, and I would like to hear their input. I've heard, my gosh, I'm sure I'm speaking for the rest. We have two periods of the day where we, for either collaboration or prep time or stuff, this is a way to get rid of it. The school board wants to get rid of this. Well, all we've done is follow, to this point, what has been presented us, what was the best. And up to this point, we have been told the semester system was the best. So now, I would like to know, why we should go back to the trimester, and I would like to hear from those of you who are teaching.
And before we go there, can I add to what I'd like to
discuss?
I downloaded the Utah credit and course requirements in academic units. I plugged in, which we had when we went to semester. Here's a student who's going to take foreign language. For one thing, we require foreign language for 1 year that nobody else does in the state. Are we going to do away with that? If you plug in, I was playing with trimesters, trying to do, how do I have foreign language? The other thing that I'm concerned about is one of the reasons we went to semester, and I experienced a daughter who has trouble with math. who had it AB, and then she had it BC. She went almost an entire year without math. She needed remediation, you know, almost had to retake that entire year because of her lapse. I've had parents tell me how wonderful they have math every single day, all year long. The other issue, because I was on three committees looking at what we wanted to go through. We played with this so many years in so many ways. We have an interesting thing at Logan High in that we do have so many to take foreign language, but more than that, we have orchestra, band, choir programs, and when we go trimester, you will have students who take three classes every single year. I tried to put that in with what's required, with a flex, and doing orchestra year-round, which is what my child did. Couldn't even do it, or, you know, tried to have to be early morning seminary all the time. And truly, she couldn't have taken debate. She couldn't have taken, you know, her foreign language and all of those other things. And that's one of the things I've had people say to me, even BATC, I sit on their board. They've had more Logan High kids taking classes at BATC since we went to the 7-period semester than ever before because they actually have 2 periods they can give. We go back to a 5-period trimester. We're limiting those opportunities as well as putting kids at risk, different teachers, different trimesters, and not daily seat time in language arts, science, and math. And for my family, it was the math that was the biggest deficit. So I'd like that added to your question.
I appreciate those concerns, and I'll probably defer to Dan and Kirk on the reasons you left the tri and went to the semester, because I wasn't here. I've heard some of them, but you know, I wasn't here when that occurred. I can tell you this, I taught for years in the trimester system. And unless a kid is an absolute struggling student, you can get through a math class in 2 trimesters and do just fine. You really can.
But
and
you
that
can
happened
do it without
flex any
too.
Flex. That was with no flex. Now if I have 50 minutes to help those kids that are struggling, we can do well. My proposal is that we identify our struggling students as they enter Logan High School, and they can take a year-long math course, or if they're doing okay, they can take a 2-trimester. So there's some flexibility in what you can do. The other thing is, yes, you can take more classes in the trimester, but if a kid doesn't get it in the semester, you have more choices. But if a kid right now doesn't get it the first time, they're in trouble. They're in trouble. We
isn't
don't
that
have
with
built-in remediation
trimester
to
without
help
flex, flex
What's
two.
That?
It's the same with trimester without flex too, though,
yeah,
right?
My thing that I'm passionate about is a flex system.
And I think
and
I am too.
I am going to jump on board any schedule that sacrifices the least amount of instructional time. But right now, all the research says what's good intervention, we're not doing it. We have a huge group, and I know there's a group of students that want to take 5 AP courses and be in the musical and do all these other things, but that's a small percentage. We have a whole group of students that struggle and need help. And we need a daily flex system to help those kids, regardless of what the schedule is. So again, it's not about trimester versus semester. It's about having a daily intervention or not. And if we think that you should have a daily intervention, then what schedule sacrifices the least amount of instructional time? Right now, if you're a struggling student, you don't get it the first time, you're done. You're in trouble. If you have an after-school job and you got to go babysit, you're in trouble. You have no recourse. None.
Did the faculty land at the flex in the trimester, or what is the marriage of the flex and the change of the schedule? I mean, because that's...
Well, you can insert a flex system in our current schedule, but you're going to lose instructional time. As Dan looked at, we were talking today, you might drop below the state's limit on minutes that you have to have instructional
time. You know, because we went through that 2 years ago, superintendent, and I'm trying to think, what is the number of minutes that we have to meet?
Do you have that in mind?
But what I have, I didn't pull off the minutes.
It's like 50, isn't it 50 hours per quarter, 50 hours?
That's what I'm thinking, trimester reflects.
I don't know how you can get everything that we require into some of those. You know, I was playing with it, and I guess if you totally throw out fine arts year long and some of the other things.
Well,
and those are the parents who've been calling me.
Sure.
Are you guys also talking about those classes that aren't?
Yeah, and see, we talked to every department about this. I've met with all of our teachers and departments, and our teachers have also said there are several AP courses that do not need to go the full year. And these are the teachers that are teaching the course that are sharing this information. So that frees up some of the schedule. Using an occasional flex seminary frees up the schedule, or maybe one time. And yes, you lose choices, and you can't choose everything. I mean, there's trade-off. So again, I submit to you, do we buy in the philosophy that we need a flex system for kids to get help every day?
Let me interrupt this for a second, Doug. I think it's important that when we went and took the 2 years that we looked at to go to this new schedule, the number one objective or goal coming out of that was daily contact.
Correct.
And I think what we looked at is the two programs that were glowing at Logan High School was our fine arts program and our AP program. And those people were meeting daily. And I think that a lot of the people wanted to share that. They wanted to have part of that so that they could see that same kind of success. So I think that really guided a lot of the decision making as we went through looking at the semester. I think what we're looking at now and what I'm sensing now in the 7 years that I've been at Logan High School is things have changed. Our student, the diversity, what we're seeing coming into the school, if you look at the issues of truancy, you look at the issue of failing students, we need to do something to capture them. We've worked really hard, the superintendent and I and a lot of other people, with alternative education. What are we doing to help these kids? Putting in intervention programs. And I'm not really going to champion anything other than a flex. 100% of our students need to have intervention. Whether it's the kids that are the AP students that are scored 36 on their ACT, or the kid that doesn't want to come to school, that we have to convince that's where they need to be. If we're just targeting certain kids, we can go back to look at the freshman block program that was in the school for maybe 3 years that failed miserably because those kids felt like they were inferior. And that's why that program failed. So and I'm not sure where we're headed with the FIT program right now, but I think if we take our whole student body and put our arms around them, we're going to have something special. And we can make it and we can develop to fit Logan High School's needs. And that's where we need to look at. We need to make sure that we're careful on not losing teachers. We got to be careful that we're not losing programs. And we need to look at all that as we go through that. Whether we start out on a trimester schedule or a semester schedule and we evolve to something else, that's fine. But we really need to look at what we're doing and we're helping those students. When we have 500 freshmen that are failing a class and you add all the Caucasian kids and all the Hispanic kids and you're at 1,000 students that have failed a class, that's not good.
You know, and I think if you talked to board members and probably the educators who are here too, I'm for a flex. I think some kind of a flexible schedule. I think where I have, you know, I felt like it was a jump from flex is good too, so therefore we must go to a 5-period trimester without looking at that daily contact and some of those things. And that's the only reason why I'm reticent at all about a flex schedule. It's not the flex schedule I'm reticent about. I don't know how other board members feel. It's the jumping back to a five-period trimester. And as I've talked with educators and I've talked with parents, that's where, you know, and there are a few who are for it, but they were also for it when we weren't going ever back to it. But, you know, I'm really, that's where I started saying, whoa, wait a minute. The Flex, I've been to presentations. I think everybody on our board's been to presentations by Lake Ridge Junior. We loved what we heard, especially with the flexible lunchtime. And I can see that part of our building plan, you know, we ought to look at doing that lunchroom one of the first things we do so that we can do some flexibility. I know for me and for the people who have talked with me, it's going to the five-period trimester that all of the concern is.
Well, I think the bottom line to me is we've got to do what's best for students. I mean, that's the bottom line. If we're struggling somewhere, I don't think there's a one on the board that their number one priority is what's best for students. Period. I mean, anything we base our decisions on and everything, I know that's what we put our the total answer. Is this best for students? So I think we're open, we're ready to listen, but I'd like to hear from, I see these educators here. I want to hear what you're feeling about this, what you've heard. You know, I want to know. So I'm asking.
Mike,
go
first. Kristen, you have a question first.
Oh, I'm sorry. When I got on the board forever ago, it feels like, this is the debate we had right when I got on board, was the switch over to this schedule. And prior to me getting on the board, we had had many parent meetings involved in the discussion of switching over to the current schedule we're on. And it was very involved. We had lots of input. Parents had tons of input. And I believe it was before that even got brought to the board. And I really feel like that it's kind of an interesting situation that we as board, at least I feel like we're in, because I don't believe we've had enough parent buy-in from this. Because I think that as a parent of a Logan High student, and have been a parent of Logan High student for many, many years, I don't think I would have known about this unless, for two reasons. One, I'm on the board and I got it on my agenda. And two, Jane comes home and says, why are we doing this, Mom? I don't understand why this is going on. So I don't believe that we have gotten enough parent input on this situation. If we don't have our parents behind us, you might as well slit all of our throats. And you can't put us in a situation to say this is good or this is bad without an army of parents behind us, because they're going to hang us off if they don't like it. So I'm frustrated that we haven't had those cottage meetings prior to this point and really got those parents involved in the reasons why. They may love it. They may hate it. I don't know what they're going to say. The parents that have contacted me, you know, just because of what they've heard from their children, are not happy. They're not happy at all. So I'm just putting that to you, that's a frustration to me that we haven't had those cottage meetings, you know, 6 months ago, and really got those parents involved. You can empower parents and they can make huge changes in this district. It's been done in the past, and they can go one way or the other based on what information they're trying to get out. The other thing is, it's also slightly frustrating to me that we went on a two-period prep for this very reason, to try to remediate students. Then 2 months later, or 2 years later, we're going to go late start so that we can help students. Why have those things that we've given you in the past, two prep periods and late start day, not helped students, is my question.
Well, the two prep periods is not for remediation. That's for collaboration.
Well, when it went to two prep periods, it was my understanding that students could get help during those time frames.
No, they're scheduled for classes. They can't go see the teacher during the prep. They're in the class. The Wednesday, we finish our collaboration meetings, responsive school.
accreditation meetings, all the different meetings that we have, we use Wednesdays. But we try to be done between 8 and 8:10, which leaves 40 minutes for kids to go in and get help.
The original plan said 2 weeks of the month would be for remediation.
That, you know, that's once a week compared to daily intervention.
Yeah.
But this, but the, in the second prep period was supposed to be for teachers to, at least my understanding, may perhaps not that the student could come in and participate in the discussion, but that the Spanish teacher could meet with the math teacher, and they're both having a problem with the student, that they could get together and kind of figure out avenues or ways to help that student to be successful.
Yeah, and they've used it for collaboration. We have a lot of departments that develop common assessments during that extra prep, lesson plan, common lesson plans, and have done a lot of professional development during their second prep, and which does make them better tier one instruction. But again, the student has no built-in time during the day to go and get help.
You know, Christy, you also, we've had a lot of things thrust upon the educational system in the last year alone, let alone the back of 2 years. And no one felt that we would have classes as large as they are now. We wouldn't feel that our teachers are just saying, hey, I would need a PE classroom today. And I almost brings tears to my eyes to watch Brian McKay trying to cover the rubber room where he had about 8 badminton things going on, to come back into this big gym where he had 2 basketball games going on, and or in this gym where he had another 2 basketball games going on, teams, all that stuff. And I was trying to do an evaluation. I'm just running behind Brian McKay as he's going from every place to every person. I said, Brian, how do you provide any instruction, basic skills in sports? He says, Kirk, I am just happy if I can have these students do some motor activities and moving around. It used to be I could just do badminton. I can't do that with this. And so that's our PE. If you listen to Mr. Birmingham and his classes, so those things have been changed the landscape and changed what we were doing. If we go back 2 or 3 years ago with the aides in our ESL classrooms that we used to have, when we used to have sheltered classes because we could have a teacher allocated to teach a class with ESL students outside of the regular biology class, most collaboration times and the use of that just prep period, call it, increased the ability, I mean, increased the integrity of tier one instruction for all students. But now, if you go into it, and I had a conversation with Bruce Crane, Principal Cox and I did the other day about Bruce saying, what am I going to do about these 10 kids who are there? I do have one aide, but what am I going to do? I would like to teach them history, but I, and in his discussion, we could bring on story after story like that. So this is a trimester 6 with the prep, and 6 which includes the flex. I don't know, but I do know that we have to do something. As we talked last year in this fall in the summer, and the talk about the size of classes and the fact that teachers were going to teach 5 out of 7 period a day, what that would do, and how I believe some of the school board members, President Lynn, some of the others said, you got comments from parents saying, well, why can you continue to do that when the classes are as big as they are? Wouldn't the classes be smaller if teachers were teaching 6 out of 7? We've tried to respond to that in a very proactive way. This is one of the things that we're coming forth. And why, when we've had meetings 3 or 4 months ago, we wouldn't dare have a meeting without the school board saying, you know, yeah, let's take a look at something else. We would, I think you would want us out there.
I'm sorry, meetings without you guys knowing what we're doing.
Well, we would want to have know what you're doing, but certainly we want to have you get feedback from parents.
Yeah, but you first have to come to the school board before you could go out to do that, before we even give our permission to do that. I think. Anyway, I want to hear from teachers. Can we?
Yeah.
Tell us what you're feeling.
Well, first of all, let me just echo Colin Heron, and Christy, and yourself. I think they're all good points, and it's good that you mentioned them. Second of all, let me say that I agree 100% with Doug that the remediation on a need basis is a really good idea. Having flexible in the schedule is something that also teachers are very much in favor of. What a lot of teachers are afraid of is the 5-grade trimester and not the flex. The flex period is good if it's used correctly, I think. What a lot of teachers have also talked to me about, and I'm speaking as a teacher now, not in any other official capacity, is that these not-for-credit courses are going to take away from the ability of students to take the courses that they really want to take the credit. And most of the schools that I've looked at that have a flex schedule like that built in where they're teaching not-for-credit courses are junior highs and not high schools. If students want to be able to take the courses that they want, and we've got a lot of really good science courses and math courses and arts courses and foreign language courses which are offered right now, which would be obliterated if we went back to a trimester schedule. That concerns me a lot because I do teach in lots of class. The ESL is a non-starter because right now I'm teaching the ESL study skills class for ESL students who need that remediation. They're getting it on a daily basis all the time right now. And those students who really want to succeed are given every chance to succeed between their ESL English class and their ESL studies plus class. And it's not that they would get any more remediation and a flex than they would through right now. We're working with the individual teachers, working with them on individual assignments. We are making sure that they get the help that they need given the personnel that we have. The next point, I think, which is definitely worth bearing out, is that the math department has put forth some very hard data that shows that we are outperforming the bejesus out of Skyview and Mountain Crest on our semester schedule because of the daily contact and because of the collaboration. And why would we ever want to go back to where we were before we were outperforming these two schools? They're saying they've made some very coherent and well-articulated arguments for staying with the program that we have right now, the schedule that we have right now, with or without the adoption of a test. And I think that those are worth looking at. As far as the 10 minutes with the flex classes being put back into the time with the regular classes, that's not the same as 10 minutes of instruction in a regular class. I don't think I could ever make that argument in all seriousness. And I think our math teachers would be more than any other department in the school overwhelmed with students coming in for remediation because, unfortunately, that's where most kids struggle, math. We're also very concerned about the fact that some AP teachers have come forward and said, well, we wouldn't mind trying to teach our AP curriculum only two or two trimesters. But I have no faith whatsoever in believing that would continue for more than a year or two. I think given the opportunity to teach an AP class over the whole year with a longer class period, most AP teachers are going to offer that, and that's going to diminish the number of classes which are offered even further. And lastly, I think it's worth mentioning that we've put forward, three departments have put forward a possible schedule which includes a flex period built in but does not switch away from the semester schedule which we have now, which would give us the benefits of the flex period, which Doug has very eloquently talked about, without diminishing the course offerings and without putting a lot of things that we're doing right now in jeopardy. I think that's something that would be very much worth looking into.
Okay.
If I could speak to what she said about the students taking a class A the first and second trimester, not having a third the summer or the first trimester of the next year, you spend so much time reviewing. You have to reteach practically everything you taught the last year because it's been 9 months since they had the class before, which doesn't happen in the semester schedule, of course. Would work with math, works with language. They're better with smaller amounts over a longer space of time. That's what all the research has shown. Which is why I think we like the semester schedule, because it's smaller amounts over a longer space of time. And our achievement that way has gone. Back when I went to Logan High all those years ago,
I took Spanish. Sorry. I took orchestra. You couldn't do that. I lived for an orchestra. I lived for my language. You didn't. The students will not be able to. Sorry.
No, it's okay. Don't you even apologize for nothing.
Now there's a bias favorite.
The reason Logan Heights is the way it is because of the orchestra program, the language program, the math program, the science program that we've always excelled in, and things just would not be the same if all of those courses got eliminated, because there is no room in a trimester system. We saw that when we were doing the 2 years of study. Dan Stoll brought in his computer and showed, after plugging in all the good things, the new requirements, what would happen to all those things that makes Logan High Logan High. And they were not there anymore. You had to choose. Even back then, before we had all these new requirements, I did take early morning seminary every year until I was a senior, and I said, oh, okay, maybe I've done enough classes, I don't have to do that anymore. But it was the only way to do it. But it is, that was before all these new requirements got in. You can't even do that anymore. You could take early morning seminary all you want, but you still wouldn't have time in a 5-period schedule to get the electives that you want to have. Not only that, but I just think the learning of the students is better. Shorter period of time over a longer period of time. You only have the 2.5 months in the summer for them to forget, and then you start again. And it's not like waiting 9 months to start the class over. So that is my opinion of the way things are and the way I think about it. I don't think, not only, you know, as a teacher now and what would be good, what I think would be good now, but as I saw things when I was a student, the science math classes were great, but I lived for the elective classes. It's what took me with scholarships to college and eventually, you know, to get here. I just would hate to have that eliminated.
Thank you for your passion. We all feel that. I started here when the trimester started. And I loved it. We only had 800 kids at Logan High. And we prided ourselves in the foreign language department as an elective that 65% at any given time in the trimester at Logan High were taking and choosing to take a foreign language. It was not required then. We were only second in the state to Judge Memorial on foreign language percentage of students in the state. Well, of course, we wanted to keep that, and of course, the state gave us a lot of new classes that had to be taught, and we kind of felt we were being pushed out. We feel a little bit being pushed out again, maybe going back to the trimesters. But we want to thank you for your support of us over the last few years, and going out on a limb and making a 1-year requirement for foreign language. As you know, we're the only high school in the state, and we're the envy. When we ever go to a conference of every other high school that we meet with, and we love our students, they love our classes. We'd hate to eliminate those, and I hear a little comment. You know, we hear comments about, well, maybe we'll have to get rid of that requirement in order to fit the other things in. Okay, we know we'll be the first on the chopping block to have that requirement taken away again. But I'll tell you, my Hispanic kids, there are a lot of them, and I'm sure a lot of them are in German too, they take French as a foreign language, and they do really very, very well. And it's a class that they can kind of feel comfortable in. okay? And their culture is appreciated. And I hate to see that lost for those kids. I thought I loved the trimester until we went to semesters. Now I love seeing those kids every day, not just first and second, or second and third, or
first and third.
Okay. And we all love seeing those kids every day. And I can't imagine anybody, not an AP teacher, I can't really imagine them coming out and saying, oh yeah, we'll just take them to two of the trimesters. If you have your druthers, you want those kids all year. Okay, we've had these kids for 88 days so far this year. I mean, we're almost at the end of the semester. And my gosh, the bond with those kids. If I couldn't see them the rest of the year, I mean, I would be so sad, really, for those relationships with my students. That's how I feel. But take a look at the seven-period day on a semester with flex that Mike came up with. And I don't know whether any of you have seen that schedule. We'd like to have the flex. We'd still like to stay with the semester, the 7-period day, and one long prep hour.
How do you feel about if the flex was put in on the semester day and the length of instructional time is cut down? Could you still be an effective educator in that thing, isn't that what I've seen, it was 45 minutes, you could still have a flex.
If I could see those kids and not just, will you come in the morning and they don't show up?
Yeah.
If I could know that they were going to come, because they have to come, they have to be someplace, and they could come, make up a test, get a little help. 5 minutes with a kid is worth an hour with them in class when they're lost. Just 5 minutes.
I agree. I think we could be just as effective in 45 minutes as we are at 50. I could.
Right.
I mean, I can't speak for everyone. Yeah. I think if that was an option, I would definitely take it.
Okay. Mike, I don't know if I got you wrong, but did you say that you felt there was no need for a flex? Prefer the other?
No, I think the flex schedule is a great idea. I just don't think that we need to use the trimesters to talk with.
Okay, but you would be in favor of a flex with a semester and teach 45 minutes?
I think we can do it with a 50-minute period. I don't think we need to go to 45, do it until limit. I think I've shown that. But if we had to go to 45, I think that would be a worthwhile sacrifice because, like they said, if those students are really coming in for help on a flex period, then number one, they would be working better in the actual instructional time that they're getting in 45 minutes. And number two, that would cut way down, like Doug has said, on the distractions that we're getting, because all of the extraneous stuff that really cuts into our instruction time, which is cut into our instruction time big time this year, would be handled during the flex period, so we could be more effective teachers in that 45 minutes. I don't think it's necessary, but I could live with it, certainly.
You would lengthen the day quite a bit, though, if you kept it at 50 minutes, though.
We work till 3 o'clock anyway.
It lengthened the day for the students.
Yeah. But the students have also overwhelmingly supported the extended lunch period. So
that is true, too.
Most of them would have no problem staying till 3 o'clock, but then they could have a 45-minute or an hour lunch.
With you representing the Teachers Association, would the teachers be willing to work longer?
The teachers have to be here till 3 o'clock anyway.
That's not entirely true. Teachers teaching until 3 o'clock. Well, with your schedules, I thought that
they would get semester time off for the last period.
It's just changing that last 25 minutes of the day that we stay after school to the lunch period.
To the lunch period.
We're still teaching the same amount of time, just at a different time.
We're at school the same amount of time. I can't say with 100% assurance, but if I were a betting man, I'd put a lot of money on the fact that the teachers would jump with that.
I know this. The great thing about this is all discussion, and it takes for a lot more information gathering.
Every teacher I've talked to, with a couple of exceptions, would much rather have an extended lunch period.
So is that what you're saying? Your proposal would lengthen the school day for the students until 3 o'clock?
That was one of the proposals.
Okay. Lee, I know you had some things you wanted to say. Would you?
I'd be glad to. Bear with me for a minute. I want to lay some scenarios out for you to imagine. Okay. And I speak from experience in these because I've taught the classes I'm going to discuss. If I am teaching a drama class, trimesters work really well up to the end of the musical. After that, and the same thing applies to choir, orchestra, band, works really well to the end of the first trimester, and then the schedule falls apart, because after that, your competitions, your concerts are arranged around the holidays, the big competitions for drama, for orchestra, for choir, all of them would be approximately 2 weeks into the third trimester. You cannot get an orchestra functioning on the same page if they've only been together for 2 weeks. It doesn't work. Okay? The choirs, the orchestra, the bands would not be as competitive as they are today if you switch to a trimester system. My pottery classes. Let's talk about pottery classes. The semester system works very well because as of this week, we have entered a nonstop blizzard of art shows and competitions that will last until the end of the school year. Ideally, all of the advanced kids would have pottery the first semester leading up to that so they could compete against other seniors across the country for scholarships, college admissions, all that fun kind of stuff. But basically, if you switch to a trimester program, and I've taught under trimesters, you have a little bit longer time period each day, but you lose the kids when it's time to compete, for them to compete for the things that we're trying to accomplish, scholarships and college admissions. If we don't schedule the classes so that it fits the rest of the world, then we do the kids a disservice. AP classes. If you have an AP class and you're on a trimester system and you end up with first and third trimesters, the AP tests are scheduled for the first 2 weeks in May. Doesn't matter what AP test you're taking, that's when the tests are taken across the country. If you have first trimester and you're pounding away at AP US History, we have a great AP US History teacher with Jason Saul. Okay? If you take away the middle trimester, when he's going to be polishing them up and getting them ready to take the AP test, and give him the kids the end of March, so he has 1 month to get ready for the AP test and get them polished, your AP test results will go down. Guaranteed. Right. If you have them all scheduled so they're A and B trimester, would be better. Do you still miss that last month getting ready to take the test? Is that in the best interest of the students? Given the additional time in the classes, I like trimesters because it gives me more time every day for 60 days with the same group of kids. Because in pottery or painting or drawing, there's still the same amount of getting everything out and putting everything away. The best thing that could happen would be to minimize all the additional things that take away instructional time.
get rid of the other things that take away time from my classes, I would be a happy camper. I don't care how you do it. You can add flex. I understand flex. But looking at flex, the graphic that was put up there, if I have to give up 1,800 minutes of time with my students over the course of a year, that is 30 hours. That, under our present schedule, is 36 days if we don't have a late start Wednesday anywhere in there. That is at least 12 days per trimester at the with the flex schedule plugged in. That's 2 weeks worth of 2.5 weeks of instructional time. The only way I get that instructional time back is if those students spend all of those flex minutes back in my classroom. If they're in any other classroom getting help from any other teacher, I've lost that time with my students.
I think you have a special concern just because of, like you say, the time getting up. So would you be in favor of the flex on a semester basis or not at all? I guess that's what I'm asking you. I understand that in your situation, when you're there creating things, it's nice to have a longer period. Mm-hmm. But in the best interest of students who may be in a history, maybe in a science, maybe in a language, in English or whatever, they need that extra time. Are you willing to say, I would sooner have the semester in a flex?
I would rather have the semester in a flex. Okay. With one caveat. We've got two science teachers that are making a presentation at the NSECA conference at the end of March. One of the things they are going to be presenting on a national stage is that we need to get more correlation between, say, the ceramics and science, or ceramics and history and everything. Because as you get that kinesthetic learning, which is the same thing that our kids get in orchestra and band and dance and drama, as you get that kinesthetic learning combined with other things, it literally forces the kids to learn in pathways to the point where they cannot forget. The evidence shows, and the studies from major schools, is that the learning retention goes up to between 80 and 93%. If we really want to do something that's good for the kids, we need to tie everything together. We need to spend as much time making things work together as possible and get them out of the seats and doing something with their hands to reinforce the learning process. And then they can't forget what we're trying to teach.
Okay.
Plain and simple.
Thanks.
We have some more. We have a student here, and I thought I want to hear from you. I want to hear your opinion on trimester, and if you could use help. And we still have two wonderful counselors that I haven't heard from. And we got plenty of tissue if you should. But I don't want to hear from you, so go ahead.
And what's your name?
Thomas Guest.
Thomas Guest?
Come over here so we can hear you.
Thomas Guest, you're tissue.
Go pretty grandpa
name.
I'm
Brett
Evans
here. So this is my first year, so I'm kind of new to it. But just as clarification first, would band and choir be two semesters or three in this schedule?
As far as I'm concerned, they ought to be all three, but okay. I'm not the one that gets to decide.
And that's what they were in the past, and that took up all the schedule.
Can I interject them here? Every class wants to be two trimesters. Not every, but a lot of classes would much rather have daily contact all year long. But one of the reasons that the semester was so nice is that it equalizes that. You make every class all year long, and not just a chosen few who get special privileges to teach all year long. And the music department would certainly want to go all year long, but that would cause conflicts with other teachers who would maybe get to go all year long.
Well, I don't know your name, but like one of the board members said, it would, having it three semesters would block up your schedule, but if you're only having other classes for two, like right now on the semester schedule, I'm taking band all year and chanteurs all year, so I have 10 electives. Under the semester, I'd have 9, but then if I'm only taking math 2, that adds another one, language arts 2, that adds another one, so I'd actually end up getting more. So I personally like the trimesters, and that would be different. I'm 4.0 right now, so I don't really need the, well, I would like the flex also, just because I use it for homework once I get to AP classes and stuff. But I mean, the people that need math all year, or the people that need English, I don't see their point. Just I've never needed that. So I personally would like the trimester schedule with the flex. And you said the band would be less competitive, but if we're doing semesters with the flex and cutting off those 5 minutes each day, so that's about 20 minutes a month. So 100 minutes an hour is going to cut off our performance a lot more than it. We would have a lot less time to rehearse, and so.
Okay.
Well said.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Good for you. Okay.
Which one of you want to go first? All right, Rayanne. Good job.
I'm
here. I'm here. I'm here.
I thought if you brought 75 people in here, you'd get 75 different responses from one end to the other. And so I'm not going to speak as a teacher, because I think whatever's decided, certainly the counseling department will support and go forward with whatever. I think one thing that I haven't heard, maybe I've been hanging with Zane too long, is what the financial ramifications, who's going to manage the program, what will that take? Second of all, I think that we've lost a lot of our interventions that we've had on a regular basis. I have students and parents ask me, is there anything after school or in the morning? And we've lost all of that. So the interventions that we did have, four students are gone. And maybe that impacts the grades that we're seeing with our students. So, you know, I think Ann and I might have been in the same math school, but the increase in requirements, it does get a little tricky. If I'm an AP physics teacher, maybe I do need to go all three trimesters, and I think that would be the key. What are you willing to sacrifice? I know one year we talked to Ogden about their music program, and they only go 2 trimesters, and I think it shows it. Ogden, but. And so I think when you're talking about some of our electives and whatnot, it's a real balance situation when you get to the administration as far as what goes when. As far as flex, I think it can be helpful how you fit that in. I know that we are about 4 or 5 weeks behind in registration. We'd just like to get going on registration for next year.
Do you see a need, a growing need for intervention at the high school?
Well, I think, like Mike said, you know, with his ESL program that he works with, the bulk of, well, how many ESL students, is that I like to see a graph with attendance and grades at the high school over the last 3 years. We talked earlier about our attendance issues. How does that correlate with our grade issues? I think there's probably a bigger correlation than what we'd like to admit. But a flex doesn't hurt. I mean, it would only help enhance what we have. So, but how we go about that, is that a decision we can make in 2-3 weeks, or is that something we need to look at? Well, totally what otherwise Alice did.
Rayanne, can you just clarify a question I have? So our student here, I'm sorry, Thomas. Is it okay if I use you as an example, Thomas?
Yes.
If we went to the trimester schedule, could Thomas take Chanterre and band?
He can't take it on a semester schedule for 4 years.
But as a freshman, could he do that? Right now, he's doing that as a freshman.
He can do it like outside classes.
But he couldn't do it and take the required classes during the school day.
See, what I'm doing right now is I'm not taking the language, and I'm taking early morning. But even with both schedules, I'll have to take online classes, and that's just something that I'm willing to do.
To get your music in.
Yeah,
but then you can look at the new online.
Which then we lose money.
But technically, on either schedule, he couldn't do both programs.
No, not for 4 years.
Okay.
May I?
Not yet.
We're waiting.
For my moment.
No, Donna, we'd like to hear from you.
Go for it, Donna.
You know, two things I thought of. I've been on the scheduling committee since Dr. Nelson, 8 or 9 years ago, meeting at 7 in the morning, numerous times.
Yeah, we met at least once a month, forever.
So it's been a long process. And I think to address one of your questions, why is even the discussion going on right now about something different or about a flex? I think things are different now than they were 6 years ago or 7 years ago. And I don't know what it's going to look like another few years from now. But I think when we look seriously at switching, there were two things we really looked at. We looked at choice for students and parents. And then we really looked at the divorce step with rigorous relevance and relationships. And we did look at student family and the F grade. And as I was talking to Dan this morning, I really think that some of the things that we thought the semester might fix for a variety of reasons didn't fix. And I don't know what the answer is, but I think the things that we thought of are different now than they were then. So I think we almost need to start the process over again. But I'm not going to go as far as to say it was a mistake switching, because I think we've done some neat good things. But I think some of the things we hoped we would fix may not have been fixed. And choices, I think we switched to the semester hoping choices would be the right answer and parents would be happy with choices. And I'm not sure that gaining the choices we've gained have outweighed some of the other side effects. So, I don't know what the answer is. I remember sitting numerous times with at least 4 different principals now, 3 different principals here. There isn't a magic button to pull it, and I don't know what it is. But I think the flex is something right now that we're desperately lacking. That what we hoped when we looked at the numbers 5 years ago, we hoped we would fix the multiple F's, and we haven't. It wasn't. It, for whatever reason, and I don't know if we need to go back and look at why that didn't happen, but some of the things we truly, truly believed we fixed didn't get fixed. And we're losing kids, and that's what breaks my heart, and I'll start crying over losing kids. So that's Mr. Allen.
I go ahead. Oh, I work in school board members. I had two scenarios that happened to me yesterday, and say Tuesday, okay, last Friday also. Had a young man by the name of Andrew, who is Hispanic, come in, and I was talking to him. Why is it I'm always having to bounce you out of the hall? Why is it? Friendly, good kid, not a big problem. Why is it? We started talking about the struggles that he was having in every one of his classes. And why it wasn't enjoyable for him to go to classes. I go there, I think I've got it, I go home, I forget it. And that if I could just go back and have them say it again, well, how many times will it take? And he and I mapped out a plan. That was one student. And the plan would require additional resources, coordination, some things. But I think if I were to, you guys would probably know the young man, because he is such a friendly young man. The other one was two kids were brought up to me, taught by the PE teacher.
hanging out in the hallway. And I had the two young ladies there, and I said, what are you guys doing? Why aren't you in class? And this one girl said, the other girl, she's helping me with my math. And I said, oh, come on, you don't do the math. They both produced papers. He said, yes, we are. We're doing math. She explains it to me. I don't get it, class. Now, again, there was a language issue with both of those kids. And as you know, my background, I really have such a feeling that those kids were struggling to learn in the regular environment. Our FIT program has really gone out after those behavior kids. Those kids who cause disruptions in classes, and what they're doing with the FIT program, those interventions, I think is working on those kids. The other kids we have are those who are really struggling to learn, and whether it be a trimester, semester, whatever it is, that population has grown, and we have got to do something more proactive to help them. Not behavior problems, they just are struggling to learn in our curriculum, and they're not just Hispanic. There are other kids who are learning. They come and say, I want to go down to South Campus. You know, why do you want to go to South Campus? They have smaller classes. I know they'll explain it to me more. The work doesn't go as fast. I can get it better down there. And, well, I think we can do that up here at Logan High School. And something needs going after again, those kids who, to me, are the forgotten majority of struggling kids, because they don't create problems for us as far as acting out. They're in the hall and part of my hall monitor kids, but well-behaved students as far as respectful to adults.
Question. One member of your community council, who will remain unnamed, but you'll know who it is, expressed concern about doing Caucasian Hispanic. And I'm just wondering, as you do these presentations, if you could even do it I know as we break it down, it also can be other, so it's not just Hispanic, but it could be minorities, or, because, do you know what I'm saying? So that if I'm a Hispanic parent and I come, I don't feel like you're picking on, or, because I think a lot of our lower socioeconomic and or minorities, all of them would probably fit in there rather than just our Hispanics. So that would be one suggestion as you, you know, because I want to be somewhat politically correct as we do this, sure. So that we know we're not just targeting in on the Hispanics or language, people with language problems.
That's a good point.
I'll back that up 100%. My worst students are not Hispanics.
Right, well, and that's why
I'm curious. The ACT and everybody that sends us the data puts it exactly
out. Yeah, I know it does, but I also know we can do it with either all minorities or low socioeconomic, some other way instead of specifically just our Hispanics.
Someday we'll come as Caucasian and non-Caucasian.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. But.
Or kids who are doing well and kids who aren't doing, and then break, I don't know.
It's motivated versus non-motivated.
Yeah,
it's
truly.
That's the only distinction that really matters. There's some students that don't care, other students that do care, and
And I know we do look at those achievement gaps, but I know it's all students, you know, versus Caucasians, and if we can some way express it that way, then at least this one person who thinks we're always just focusing on that group, we can say we're focusing on all kids. We're disaggregating all kids.
I hesitate to bring this up, but I'm going to anyway.
Okay.
Good. I would like to hear from the teachers on this probably more than anybody, because I've heard it from other teachers and I've heard it from a small percentage of parents that when they had kids that were on a 5-period schedule, they seemed to do better than the kids that are on a 7-period schedule. They feel like the kids are not staying alert, doing as well the 6th and 7th hour as they are earlier in the day. And I need to know if that's really something that has affected you as teachers, or is that something that people are just bringing as an excuse? I don't know, because I've been in the classroom.
I could address that. I think part of the problem is that students, even AP students today, are a lot less motivated than they were 5-10 years ago. And number two, they were never tempted to take 5 AP classes at a time before because it was impossible. I think if we just tell the students, as counselors or as parents or as teachers, what are you thinking? Yeah, you have to be realistic about this. If you say I'm going to cut my AP classes up to 3 per semester and take other realistic courses where you're not required to do 2 to 4 hours of homework a night, then you're not going to suffer so much. But even my best students today are a lot less motivated than they were 5 years ago for whatever reason. And I'm sure there's a lot of things that go into that, but I don't think going to a trimester schedule would ameliorate that problem.
For me, I see the students are just running from one thing to the next. Truly, I feel that way myself. Maybe having the flex where they can just kind of let down for a little bit longer lunch would help. Just some kind of a point in the day where they can just kind of slow down just a little bit. And I think that would help. But I do agree that they're not as motivated as they were.
It's probably worth pointing out that probably 50% of our tardies are fifth hour because they're late coming back from lunch.
And first hour.
Our special ed population with IEP, they all have a transition class. And yet they're probably, if you were to graph failing grades, they'd be off the chart compared to other students.
I agree that you kind of need a space to breathe, which maybe this will, it's teachers as well as students. I take lunch to do that, and I don't. And then, but I have fifth hour prep, and I ask for fifth hour prep because I'm available for second lunch during my prep hour, and they can come in to get help at that time. So I don't feel like I'm, totally cutting off. But kids need some downtime. I need downtime in the middle of the day just to decompress, just a little bit, and I do that during lunch now. But the kids, if they're eating lunch and running somewhere to get lunch, they don't have that time, really.
The social time that we used to have.
Yeah, or the just time to just think or just stop, rest for just a few minutes, which is one of the reasons I really liked the idea of an extended lunch if the kids were caught up in their classes, because that would be very motivating for me. It would have been very motivating to stay on top of things so I could have some time to decompress and just. But I think, my 6th and 7th hours, they're big classes. They don't seem to be. They're not sleeping at all. And they're fun.
Yeah.
But I think part of that has to do. So I make sure I do things. I'm a little more animated myself during 6th and 7th hour to motivate them to be that way. You know what I mean? Just for, because they need that. I need that. Even if it's fake a little bit.
When would the flex hour be if
it happened? Well, it wouldn't be the first hour of the day, I can guarantee you that. Or the last. I think we'd have to look at it strategically. I think you're looking somewhere between 3rd and 5th hours, somewhere in that area.
When we have all the bridge students on campus, So they're all there.
Well, Adelaide Stevenson, that's what they, they had it. So those high-end kids are always on top of everything. They didn't have to be on campus, period, during that flex time. And it wasn't 9 through 12. It was just the 11th and 12th graders that they gave that privilege to. But it was a motivator. All of the 9th grade kids during that flex time went to a 9th grade class that they did their career readiness and skills, and they did problem solving and a lot of those kind of value classes, if you will. So they all had someplace they had to be, but it was also scheduled so they were doing remediation. And then 10th, 11th, and 12th, if you missed class, if you were blowing it, you were sitting in class.
Larry Williams told me, if he got the chance to speak, he was going to say that he was for a flex hour. He has a son at the university who could have used help with math, but because he always had a sport in the afternoon, and for whatever reason, that teacher
the 1 year wasn't available in the morning for help. So he was going to say he believed in the need for flex, is what he told me. If he was given the chance to speak.
Which he was.
Yes, he was. So I'm speaking for him, and he said a few other things, but I can't really quote him well, so I won't say them.
Well, it just seems to me, in everything that, I've sort of heard here today, that the need of the flex seems to be a valuable thing. It seems to me that the confrontation, if you will, comes between trimesters and semesters. And I think that needs to be resolved. And one asks, personally, I see it hard to go to a trimester system all of a sudden. This is my opinion now. It's not a board's feeling or anything. I just see it as being very difficult to go to a trimester system all of a sudden next year. To me, if we're going to go to a flex system, it seems to me like it would be more advantageous to see what could be done on the semester system this next year, see what happens from it, see if there is some improvement, and then go from there. I don't know. That's just sort of how my feeling would be in everything that I've heard tonight and from what I've heard. I know I've had a lot of parents come to me. I know a lot of you are for semesters, but I've had a lot of parents come to me saying they're getting tired that at midnight forcing their kids to go to bed because they have been up studying continuously, especially those who are in athletics, get home late, and half the time they don't even want to eat. They just want to get in and get going, and they're studying until late at night, and they're forced to go.
And that's part of the reason I asked that question, because I've had parents tell me that they've had kids drop out of doing activities because they wanted to keep their academics up.
Maybe we need to stick to the school board policy, homework policy. That the district has, that might help.
Well, and also, again, the counseling from you counselors, I know you talk about you don't want to leave it all till senior year and you want to put these things in these years, but I also think that discussion of, you know, I made sure during football my son didn't have certain things when we were on a trimester, and I also made sure when my daughter was in too many AP classes, pulled her out, she actually took an art class her senior year. And I think sometimes you have to balance those hard classes. If you're taking really hard classes, you need to take orchestra and chanteres or whatever. That you have the classes that though they take a lot of, you know, your time while you're there, they don't have the hours of homework. And I think kids need to be advised that. And you know what? I think in my life, and I would guess every person's here, learning to balance all of the demands on you and making wise choices planning. We talk about life skills being on time. I also think that's a life skill we can teach kids. Sometimes, I learned this when I was 30. Not only could I not do everything, I didn't want to anymore. And you know, and I think that's something that I did until I was 30. But you know, I think that's...
I don't believe that.
You know, I totally saw that. But I think it's something that, you know, we need to... And parents need to monitor with their kids, are they overloading, and is it because they are in so many hours of ballet or gymnastics or everything? We really need to learn to balance, and that probably needs to be mentioned during registration.
Yeah, and I think the teachers need to be aware of how many classes the students have and not pile on the homework all at the same time and different things. Sometimes I think if the teachers would just, you know, we're teaching a whole year long, they used to have, you know, two-thirds of the way. If you could really reduce the homework load two-thirds of the, you know, a third of the way at least every single day, the students wouldn't have so much if the teachers were a little more responsible. And of course, every teacher thinks their class is the most important and we want, you know, to keep them up. But I think in a lot of ways, we could be
But isn't that part of the professional learning communities? Aren't you supposed to sit down as you do the cross-curricular stuff and say, well, we're doing this big unit's due this day, and so therefore we're not going to have the English assignment due because it's the science on this date. Mm-hmm. Isn't that one of the PLCs that I've trained that I've been to? That's part of the discussion is you're working on doing that cross-curricular. And so you do limit some of that.
That's probably going to get shut down here, but as long as we're just discussing... in Europe, that's exactly what they do. The teachers have a collaboration time, and they're together, and they have a big chart on the wall, and you have to sign up for a time to give major tests. And if you can only have 2 tests per day that are big with a lot of points, and if those 2 times are already taken up, then you have to find another time to make it. So the teachers have to work it out among themselves when they're going to give the big tests, and it's illegal to give more than so many really major tests on any given day.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of students will probably agree with that, but it's going to be a logistics nightmare, of course, for adventurers.
Mm-hmm. That's in the master schedule.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Jim and Fred, we haven't heard from you.
Well, I've been listening. I like
to. Do you have anything you have to say?
I'm just saying, let's take this slow. Let's not move real fast. If you want to try it, you give that flex system a try, but don't be changing that too quickly before you take a real good look at what's going on. That's my opinion.
Jim?
What?
Any questions, any concerns, anything you'd like to voice?
I was persuaded by Doug's talk that we ought to go immediately to trimesters and go to flex. And then the teacher started talking, and now I'm back to semesters with flex. And then the trouble is, we get input from, I don't know. I don't know what the best way to go is.
No, indeed.
I have no idea. I would like to honor what the administration wants to do. But on the other hand, I know I'm going to get 20 parents calling me saying, why did you do that? And 20 parents saying, why did you do that last year? And I don't know. And so I find myself conflicted. I'm hesitant to say, let's jump in and do trimesters and drop semesters, because I know as a board member, I'm going to get those parents who are not happy with it calling me. I don't get the parents who are happy.
Yeah,
ever. I only get parents who are unhappy. I think you ought to try going to a flex. I like the flex idea. I think that's a great idea. But I think you ought to work it in semesters first.
Yeah.
And I think you need more community input. I think you need to hear from the community in terms of what they think about it and what the teachers think about it before you say, we're going to go. Because I don't think, from my opinion, I don't think you're ready.
And this flex system might work just fine. And solve your problems with the current system. I don't know. Try it. See where it goes.
I know that we get a lot, and I don't know what your response has been, Doug, as far as sharing it in with your faculty and stuff. But I'm sure that you've probably had positive feedback when you're in those meetings. It's when the meetings are over and they're thought about, and then the emails start coming to us. Instead of being honest or...
Instead of being upfront and honest during
those meetings so that you have a clear indication of that. Because we get emails saying they're trying to throw this down our throats and we don't want it. And yet... You know, we hear great reports of in your meetings that everyone seems to be aboard and everything, and then it's after.
That's natural.
Yeah, it is.
That happened even when we switched the 5 to 2 semesters.
Oh yeah.
Sure.
I think I would try to find.
And everybody gets different thoughts down the road.
No.
First, I just like to say I appreciate everybody's passion. I'm a passionate individual, and. Please don't ever mistake my passion for anger or for... Because I'm passionate, and I love the fact that everybody here is here because, one, they love kids, and they're passionate about what they do for a living. I I love that. That's why we do what we do. And I have met with teachers individually and faculty, and they've shared their opinion. So it's like you said, people, well, but yeah, but what about this? Or, well, I can see this. And, you know, that there's both ways. Like I said, first and foremost, I'm passionate about a way to help kids on a daily basis, regardless of the schedule. Let's find a way to do that without sacrificing instruction. Find a way to do that. Secondly, the number one indicator of achievement is instruction, not a schedule. That being said, it's instruction with a way to support that instruction, which is what Flex does. Our kids achieve well because we have dang good teachers. And those teachers need time to prepare. If I have big classes, then my tier one delivery has to be spot on, and that means preparation time. And then those kids can get, that will reduce the need for tier two remediation if our tier one is really supportive. And one of the reasons why these guys are so good at their jobs is because they've had that time to prepare and make common lessons and do those things. Particularly since so many of them teach four different subjects during the day, concurrent enrollment, AP, basic classes in a given day. That's hard to do. And so, you know, this has been a great, great discussion. It's awesome.
Back one more thing. I taught automotive science at Logan High School. I had one prep period. Of course, probably that subject didn't need two prep periods. So anyway, I just mentioned that. I only did one. I did great. So anyway, that's just my thought. I throw in.
Sure. But there just seems to be a lot more teachers' plates now.
Yeah.
Graduation requirements have gone up.
Yeah, it's different situations.
All these different things and the need to collaborate. Demographics and so forth.
Okay. Have you received the information that would help you as we move forward, brethren?
Certainly. Okay, let me, because you touched on it a little bit. If we were to go have these meetings with our parents, if we schedule them on the Mondays, those two Mondays we're talking about, and have some college meetings, we talk about it and say that we're looking at doing a flex group in a semester. Schedule. So we're not going to change the schedule per se, but we're going to put a flex in there. And we're going to look at that through at least the next school year to see if it meets the needs. And there could be a possibility that down the road sometime we could be looking at a trimester. Just to throw that out there. So
start discussions on whether this would work better as a semester trimester.
Right.
As we do this, we want to
And then we can gather data as we go through the year next year.
Well, I think a lot of parents are not going to understand even when you start talking about flex. They're going to think, what are we even talking about?
Well, I think we can utilize.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying.
I think what I need to know now when I go back to the teachers, are we going to be teaching 5 out of 7 or 6 out of 7? And the flex. As we go into scheduling for next year, I think that's important for us to know too. If we go into that, can you meet and get back to us and let us know? I don't know because we haven't had that discussion here tonight, but I think that's important.
But didn't we have it last summer though, when we talked about self funding?
You made a commitment.
Okay.
With self funding.
Now, what that means though is coming back and what that looks like. You have to run some data. I believe you need to run some data and make some determinations as to what does that mean, what is the impact. But that decision is not the board's decision.
Mm-mm.
That has been the building level decision with recommendation. But the fact is that you requested, with the board giving 2 additional FTE this year, that you let's put it this way, 2 less to be reduced by, and the agreement was that it would be 2 quick to make a change to 6 out of 7, and you pleaded very eloquently that can we have 1 year at 5 out of 7 with a transition for 2012-2013 going in back to 6 out of 7. That was what was agreed upon that day. Now, as you look at that and look at the whole process, there's a lot of data that can be brought, and we still need to perhaps look at some of that data as to what does the impact have on the preparation. Because you can't use preparation saying that we've done that and therefore there should be a result. Well, the result you're coming to us and saying is we have more Fs. So, you know, what's it correlated to? So you need to probably start looking at that more clearly. You have some departments that have utilized that time in a very effective manner. You have some departments and individuals who have not. Your public does not believe that it has been effective. Your peers and other schools do not believe it's been effective. And part of that has been a communication process, and I'm talking now after watching this. I don't believe that there's any communication out to people truly understanding what it is you're doing for your two periods.
We have to be able to convince our public that somehow this is what we have to do. Well, we have to support South, we have to support North, we have to support you in every way we can with a legislature that says, here's less money.
When we had the original conversations back 5 years ago when we started, one of the discussion points when the request was looking, because we were going from 4 teaching 5 to all of a sudden saying, wait a minute, as we're looking at the transition, we need more time to do the unpacking of standards, and we need more time to be able to develop the process so that we are truly spot on. Now, when we had those discussions, we were looking at a 1 to 155 and 1 to 160 ratio, not to 1 to 180. We knew that the ramification at that point, going 5 to 7, was still you were going to have a larger class size, but it was still in the low 30s, so it was much more manageable. From that, the discussion and the question was, after visiting Adelaide, is that, yeah, they had 2 prep periods, but some of their prep periods that they were using is, out of the course of 2 weeks, 3 to 4 days of that time, they were with kids. As a department, they kind of broke things through, and they were using some of that time. It wasn't a true, everyone gets too full the whole time, every day, all year long. But they worked as a department, and if someone needed one, they did some swapping. So sometimes the kids had one teacher, sometimes the kids had other teachers. I mean, we've not talked about how does this work so that it can balance it on the expectations of our financial expectations as well as the absolute need that your departments have for having quality time for preparation. And those discussions have yet to truly be held, my observation. If they have been, I will be glad to recant that statement, but I don't believe that there's been the depth of discussion in that area that could have occurred by this time. We have received commitments that there will be something done. Your fit is, and I'm so glad that it occurred, because that's one of the first major changes that have come since the organization in terms of tier intervention for children, for students. There's been talk about, but there's not been action on. This is an opportunity for you to do action.
Well, and just so that you're aware of our, well, at least my situation, especially when we started this school year with higher class sizes, I'm just telling you the information I've got from parents, is that they're frustrated about the 2 prep periods when their child is sitting on the floor in a classroom. They don't understand the reason behind that they would think it would be logical to only have 1 prep period and reduce class sizes so their child's not sitting on the floor. I think that whatever direction you go in, it just needs to be clearly communicated to the parents that this is why we're doing this.
Okay. I have just a question. It's just an idea, and just want to know what you think about it. What if on our next department meetings, you as board members visited with our departments and let them present to you what they've done with that extra prep period and how valuable it's been to them? So that way, when you field phone calls, you can say, well, I've sat down with the English and the math folks, and here's what they've done, and here's why they think it's so valuable. You know what I mean?
We'll come and
I'm just asking, would that be useful? Are
we coming to
you? Yeah, we actually are. We are, if we can work something through, our February visit is with you.
So we had departments
give you... We do school visits. And it's on a Monday.
It's a Monday, isn't it the first Monday?
Fifth. I believe it's Monday the 5th.
So that would be useful, you think?
You know, the thing is, we are getting, you know, you're having huge class sizes, and we are, you know, then people are saying, you mean they could reduce that? And I try to explain that that was a site-based decision, that we haven't, you know, that the number was put on you, how many student contacts was given to you because of budget cuts.
We are scheduled to be with you from 1 o'clock until 2. I will extend that with that process. If it takes us, 1 to 3 or 1 to 3:30,
you will have
or 1 to 4.
I just meant like on a Wednesday when they do it at a department meeting. If you join them.
What if we just had the department head there to those meetings?
All the staff. Perfect.
What every department head.
It's the 6th.
On the 6th is your day.
Okay. And we get out of department heads available between the hours. We better go at least 3 o'clock, 1 to 3.
Send the date.
That'd be fine. I think that'd be great.
Right. 9 departments.
And anytime one of the board members like to come spend the lunch period with me as I wander around the lunchroom and hit the other areas where kids are going and be there in that lunchroom when all those kids are trying to get in and be there when that line.
I think we all know that the lunchroom was never sufficient. We know that. That's sad.
And just help us take a look at some of the frustrations that our kids are feeling.
Yeah.
And hardly get time to eat. I'd like to study sometime during my lunch, and I just...
Yeah, and that's why I really like the extension of lunch.
I know that I believe I speak from the board. If there have been other proposals on the flex in terms of this,
they would like
to see it. So if you have that in writing, that would be good for discussion purposes, especially if that becomes a discussion purpose.
Schedule.
If that becomes one of the discussion
some
points that you're looking at for your parent meetings, the more that the board knows what you're proposing and talking about during that time, then they can therefore be a resource as well.
You know, and I think especially when you're with parents, because I know my mind works this way, it really helped me when we were looking at semesters, when we had some examples of schedules. So this is for the kid who takes orchestra in foreign language. This is for the kid who does this. I think that's how my mind kind of works, and I like the one where it, rather than giving all of these hours and the minutes and everything, but if it's okay, it's kind of that A and the B, how you were showing with the, this is when the flex period would be, and this is what they would be learning this, some of those, I need it more concrete for my kid, what's it going to do? Because that's what your parents are going to want to know.
What does it look like for me?
And we really don't want to put in good ideas.
What's that?
We really don't want to put... We appreciate you thinking outside the box. I do.
Well, thank you, everyone, for being here. I think there was a lot gained tonight, and I appreciate your openness and everything towards the board. It does help us. So thank you.
Thanks for being here.
Oh, gosh, we love it.
I need you to stay on this other side. Thank you as well.
Congratulations.
So,
okay, our next... review is on graduation data from last year's seniors.
Yeah, it shouldn't take too long.
It's
very, very interesting. We have not had the public, the paper yet. come to us on this. It has been part of a lot of dialogue down in the Salt Lake area because of the Tribune and the Deseret News.
Comparing schools.
In the comparison of schools. But if you'll go into your portal, if you do a refresh, you have to do a refresh. Something new. There are two different documents on there that we're going to be looking at.
What are we going into?
Portal, you're going to be going into demographics. Thank you, guys. We sure appreciate you coming.
Thank you.
Okay.
Demographics is like the 5th line down on the left-hand side. Demographics. And then there's one that, if you'll go first, in the USOE PowerPoint regarding graduation rates.
Does that dropout rate for graduation?
It says USOE PowerPoint regarding graduation rates for 2011 TDF.
Thank you.
I'm sure.
I want to quickly go through. I won't go through this entire PowerPoint. I would encourage you to spend some time with it, though. There has been a change in how our graduation rates are being calculated. It is based upon a requirement from the federal government. That requirement has two different looks at it. It's a 3-year cohort and a 4-year cohort, meaning it tracks kids from their 10th grade to their 12th grade or their 9th grade through their 12th grade. And there are two different rates that are being reported. And it's for graduated, those that graduate and those that do not graduate. Within those who do not graduate, there are dropouts and there are other completers. So there are some different definitions that we've never had before. In the past, and if you'll go down, and I apologize, this doesn't have page numbers, but if you'll go down to the one that has, keep going down until it has a...
there actually are page numbers on the acrobatic.
Yeah. On mine, I can't. 15 of 22.
Because you're on an apple.
I know. That's on the map. You go to 15 of 22.
Or if you want to come look at ours.
Yeah, if you can.
I can put it up there.
You can put it up there. That'd be great. If you look, this is where the biggest difference is. Under current and under beginning of 2011, there's a whole group of now non-graduates, retained seniors. We have groups of students who stay with us until their 22nd birthday. They are special needs, and we're working with them. They had, up to this point, we were considered them an excluded child, so we could move them off to the side before we did our calculation. We had the certificate of completion. There are times when that occurs. Those were excluded. We didn't have very many, but that occurred. There are times when you have a student who, because of their abilities, they can get into a university without actually having a high school diploma. These are accelerated kids. They used to, we had a process where we could exclude them. They now are considered a non-graduate. If the same goes for a BATC student. And the biggest one on ours is an unknown status. Numbers of students, they're with us their 9th grade year. Starting of 10th grade year, we don't see them. We don't know what's happened to them, but we don't see them. Some we may get record requests for, some we may not. But we have not tracked those kids. Up till this year, we were able to put them off to the side and do our calculations. We now have to put them into our calculations. In doing so, our graduation rate, which last year was at 93%, is now, for the 3-year cohort, at 80% graduation rate. Our 4-year cohort is at 75%. Major difference in numbers. Our dropout rate is considered to be 16%. As you look at the comparison with the two high schools that are not ours in the Valley, they are sitting at 89% and 90%. But they don't include the students that are at risk because those are all counted in the cash numbers, cash
high school
numbers. Their graduation rate is at 65%. So when you start looking at comparisons, you look at the Logan High School numbers, who have South's numbers in there, are at either 80% or at 75%. But that's including our at-risk population. We are still higher in terms of our dropouts. They are at, the county schools are at 7% each. We are at 16%.
And Marcia, just, you know, it's strange because it's been the last, well, the previous 2 years, South was part of Logan High's numbers. The 2 years before that, they were separate. They were school 710. So what you actually have is a four-year cohort where if a ninth grade student had been at South Campus, which really doesn't happen, but for the first 2 years of that cohort, we had a separate school. For the second 2 years of the cohort, we had them combined. So it's hard to tease that
last
out.
Year, just so for comparison, they took last year for graduates of 2010 and did a three-year and a four-year cohort on that group. The numbers were exactly the same for that group as what we now have. Under the old rules, they were at 93%. New rules, 80%, 75%. Statewide, you will see if you look at the numbers, the statewide numbers, as they've done the comparison, they've shown that the rates are down by anywhere between 12 to 15% from what the old rate defined. But they are consistent from, as they've taken that group and tried to put the new rules on the old set of data, we, as a state, we are still fairly consistent.
Are we required, Marshall, to include the South Campus figures?
At this point, their number is 704. They are not. There is no school of 710 anymore. They are our school.
We will have to accredit them.
If not, we would have to. They would have to be accredited and go through the whole process separately. And it is still to our advantage, as small as it is, to keep them at combined with the other 1,600 students to make it about 1,720 in terms of our student population. Now, one of the challenges we have, and the challenge the high school has, is we have a new graduating class of 2012 coming up. We have kids who are under that unknown status that we have not been able to track. We've got to do a better job of tracking those so that our graduation rate may not go up, but our drop right now, they're counted as dropouts, and there were over 80 of those students this year from that class that started back 4 years ago that we did not know about. I didn't really have records, and there are a couple of things that part of the
problem. I think there were just 56.
There were only 60. At one time it was 80.
Yeah, it may have been.
The reality, though, is that there's some tricks as well in terms of counting that we did not know about, nor did the state tell us that we will do better next year. One of which is a student doesn't come back the next year, but we haven't exited that child. Child, we assume they're going to be with us the next fall. They don't come back the next fall. Sometimes there's an exiting situation on that they're not exiting with the code that the system recognizes as it's going to another school or out of state. We're going to have to be a little more diligent in our record keeping, and I'll turn some time over to Clark, who's been working on that since that's his department.
I don't want to bore you with all the details on this, but this has been a learning process, and I don't think Logan's unique. I think the whole state's learning in this process. The one thing we found out, and it was after October 1, and you have to have all this cleaned up by September 30, was that what happens is at the end of the year, those seniors are all submitted, and there is a high school completion, and the counselors will know this, there's a high school completion status that we set to GR for graduate or GP for graduation pending or whatever, but we don't put an exit date. Every student ends the year without an exit date or an exit code. That they have the seniors have a graduation, you know, if they're graduation pending, then they have until September 30th to clean that up, and then they can be counted as graduates. If they don't clean it up, then they count as dropouts. But what we didn't realize was because a student doesn't have an exit date at the end of the year, if that student doesn't come back and we drop them as a no-show, which has been our practice forever, and they go off into, and we don't put in that they transferred out of state or they transferred within state. Well, we might catch some of the transferred within state because of the statewide ID number. But they're getting so sophisticated now in gathering data that, but anyway, so what the suggestion now is, and we'll talk about this with Stephanie, is next year as we start the year, we're going, even our no-shows, we're going to want to show one day of membership with an exit code. You know, they'll be there for one day and then they'll be exited. And that's actually what the state's told us to do. But we didn't know that this year. So that's going to impact us somewhat. Just for your information, if any of you'd like, and I'll actually give you the counselors a copy of this because I have names here. There were 21 students that were counted as dropouts and that we just sometime during the 4 years coded them as dropouts for whatever reason. There were 21 retained seniors. Now, retained seniors, that would be your special ed students mostly, don't count against us either way.
They don't count for the graduation, but they're not excluded in the overall number. So
right.
It brings our numbers down. They're considered non-completers.
We have five students who left school to take a GED sometime during that 4 years.
Those do not count.
They count as dropouts. We had eight
non-graduates.
Non-graduates. Yes, you have to get the terminology right. We had 16 graduation pending students who did not finish by September 30th, and so those 16 graduation pending then become
non-graduates.
We did have 56 unknowns, and we actually have gone through and figured out, you know, we know where some of them went. I sent a list to the state. I don't know whether they ever included that in our numbers, but I think we know much better what we need to do now that we've been through it for a year. And then we had two other completers, and then the rest of the seniors were graduates. So that just gives you a feel for numbers. And that's over the four-year cohort. We're always going to be dealing with the four-year cohort numbers, even though they will calculate the three-year, because we're a four-year high school, and that's the way the rule works. So,
what they're finding, I mean, if you look at that 5%, is that it's about 5% per year reduction.
The kids don't come back.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If you'd like to make a comparison against all of the other schools in the state, including charter schools, if on the board portal we have put the other PDF file, which talks about, it says graduation rate class of 2011 _1 PDF, and it's a 16-page document, and you can scroll through there to look at the overall state stuff as well as the individual school to see where we rate. But we have got to look at cleaning things up, but also making sure that we have a better and clearer understanding of where kids are going when they leave us.
All right. I can tell some of this is tracking, which means FTE. Somebody has to do it, and we know we're already tied on FTE. Have we determined who's going to do that? Is that Clark? Is that counselors? Is that... How are we going to do this so that it works?
I honestly believe that we're doing it. We're actually doing it now. Stephanie's doing it, and Nadine is doing it.
Nadine here.
Anytime a file goes out, I believe Stephanie sends the file to Nadine, and she sends it out. I think that's the way it works. And anytime something comes in, it's the reverse. So Nadine is keeping, but what we want to start doing, and this is a suggestion of our auditor actually, is we want to start actually keeping a copy. We'll probably just scan it and keep it on a computer someplace, but a copy of the actual request, when we get a request for a file or something like that.
The challenge is going to be, and we're those kids that we can't find, how are we going to find them? Assistance to help us track them down. We may have to start looking at some volunteers coming in and working on specifically that, where they're trying to find kids.
Now this
finders. This is going to the ancestry file.
it's going to get that big.
Because that will take time.
This I do know that a TO, a transfer out of state, or a TC, transfer out of country. Right now, they're just taking our word for that. However, if we ever get audited, we're going to have to produce documentation. A TES, which is transfer within the state, they need to show up someplace with their statewide ID number.
And what's sad is that we may, and all good, they're saying, hey, I'm going down to Clearfield High School, and they're withdrawing, and that's, you know, so you have, we may have even had communication with Clearfield High School. They never show up at Clearfield High School. It counts against us. It doesn't count against Clearfield. It counts against us. And that's part of the challenge we have, is that they've got to hook up. If they went down there for one day, then they become their property. But in that interim, if they are not showing up, we're going to have to figure out a way, because it is against our numbers, not Clearfield's numbers.
Okay. Also on that, I just read through, as part of all this stuff that was sent to us, the document we came up with for South. One of the things was accrediting South. Do we need to start in that process?
Accreditation is only if they are a separate school number. That was under the discussion if they were a separate school number. They are part of the accreditation at the high school.
Okay, what we approved, though, said we were going to have them work on accrediting.
If they were going to be a separate school.
And I thought that was part of that discussion.
We did when Dr. West was here, I think that was part of the document.
That was not finalized as whether that would be, because so the
what
negative
we approved as a board.
Not right. That they would become a separate school under a separate number, because I do not. I will go back and look, but that
yeah,
was
I do looking up with our packet today. That was one of the items that we were looking at. We were going to do in the future.
That was part, but that wasn't what was fully approved. Those were things that we were looking at.
It was also on the final document that I wrote in.
I don't know. What is your recollection, you guys? That it was going to become a separate school with a separate number?
Special purpose option, after Jill had searched that and researched that so it could be done quickly, that was what we felt. But again, we were waiting for, I guess, and maybe we should have asked the question, can we now proceed forward? But
I know it was at least approved as an option.
As a goal.
I don't, a goal or something we ought to look at.
Okay, no, that was part of the document that it's on page 18 and 19, and enrollment, and then attendance requirements, credit, and then it says the future of South Campus. South Campus will pursue 1, additional funding sources, 2, accreditation as a special purpose school, and 3, ESL endorsement of all teachers, and that's what we adopted as board.
As a full sheet. I don't remember that as the sheet that was adopted.
It's what I wrote and that we voted on. And it was part of this packet today, too.
I don't remember right
now. So that's something we need to decide what we're doing. Now, that's the future of South Campus. But, you know, that would take care of it, but it also opens up...
It doesn't take care of it.
Well, it moves it to a different...
It changes it to a different...
It changes Logan High's graduation rate. But so, you know, right. But so that's one thing, and that's why...
The question is for you guys, do you want to go through separate accreditation for that school?
I believe, well, this is not a good year to ask because of the staff problems we have had, as you know. But I think that down the line, like next year, if we get some solidification to the faculty who can do that, and we've got a great English teacher down there now who does a great job. I'd like to see what we do with that other corner.
there are consequences on either way.
So it needs to be further studied, it sounds like, to me.
We need to look at it and see.
Wasn't that more or less the long-range goal?
That was the future of South Campus.
That was what we wanted to eventually head to.
That was our vision of the future.
But they also were looking at the potential of could it become charter. So, I mean, we talked about a lot of things during that time.
Well, we adopted accreditation as a special purpose school, is what we adopted.
Okay.
Just so you, I'm just reading this, an article in our favorite senator's taxpayer's newsletter. And he's making a big deal of this whole, he called it the crisis of inflated graduation rates. And accusing USOE of cooking the books.
And now the federal government.
The rules that we are using.
There are things in here about Judy Park, but he's just.
What's very unfortunate is the rules that we were under were accepted by the. They were one of the options from the federal government under the old rules. I mean, we only followed the rules as they were given to
us. Well, all I'm saying is he's using this as ammunition to say a government system which fails to graduate 1 in 4 students from high school is unacceptable, and it plays right into his hand for his agenda.
It does. Online schools.
He doesn't need any ammunition.
That's it for the graduation. At this point, Satanik leaves at the end of the month. I don't know if this is going to go on anyone's radar, but we have the materials available. But we will probably be doing things through our own discussion points and having it available. Right now, Shanna is putting together a kind of a this is our district, and that's going to be one of the data points, and we'll have the explanations there for our public.
That information got loaded out on the web.
Also, just as an FYI, and we'll talk to you more at USBA, but we have on the web put on the portal some information about our budget that is going to be part of this document that Shanna, she's trying to do a yearly look at our district.
Build a report.
FYI.
But it allows you to happen.
Well, thank you everyone for attending. We will adjourn at 8:22 and a half.
Are we going through Thursday evening? Are we meeting as separate?
No, we're going to the MIA.
Well, the MIA is hosting us for dinner that night. Just us.
Just us.
That's it. They rotate. They rotate between districts and after we are torn. We're going to the same restaurant. It's just that they are paying for it.
Same way?
Yes, you're
right. 5 o'clock.